Following footsteps through the neon darkened corridors of silent desperation, never speaking to a soul. The poisoned air he's breathing has the dirty smell of dying, 'cause it's never seen the sunshine and it's never felt the rain. But Casey minds the arrows and ignores the fatal echoes of the clicking of seeing you here, she said, just a kiss to make a...
The Mississippi Delta was shining like a national guitar. I am following the river down the highway through the cradle of the Civil War.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. For the first time in the history of U.S. Airlines, a bankruptcy court has thrown out a union contract as it gave U.S. Airways what it demanded. The International Association of Machinists, representing about 9,000 workers at U.S. Airways, will have to agree to a concessions deal with the airline now or face the loss of its contracts. Workers know that if they reject the voluntary concessions agreement, their entire union contracts will be null and void. Flight attendants at U.S. Airways have approved 10% pay cuts. The machinist union is being hit hard, expected to lose half its jobs in its U.S. Airways mechanics local as a result of the bankruptcy court decision.
In his State of the State speech Wednesday night, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger urged lawmakers to dramatically reform budget priorities. With a deficit above $8 billion, the governor says California has a spending problem, yet he promised to submit a budget next week with no new taxes, while gutting the public employees' retirement package. WIN correspondent Vinny Lombardo has the story.
Accordingly, we must do what businesses have been doing. For new employees, we must move from a defined benefit to a defined contribution system.
Under the current retirement scheme, California employees are guaranteed a set amount. The average worker who retires at age 60 with 19 and a half years of service receives $1,673.82 a month. Dave Lowe, Assistant Director of Governmental Relations with the California School Employees Association, says the governor's proposal is fatally flawed.
What the governor wants to do is change the plan to force all the new employees to gamble their pensions on the stock market. And if they end up gambling badly, what's going to happen? Either they're going to retire in poverty or the taxpayers and the government's going to have to bail them out.
On Thursday, the governor convened a special session of the California legislature to press for tighter reins on spending. If lawmakers don't go along, Schwarzenegger says he'll appeal directly to voters at a special election in June. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
The AFL-CIO says Hadi Saleh, the international Secretary of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions, will be sorely missed. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney condemned Saleh's murder. The Iraqi labor leader was killed by assassins in his Baghdad home.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission reports that over the last 5 years, pregnancy bias complaints have risen by 10%. In 2003, there were more than 4,000 complaints of women being discriminated against because of pregnancy. By law, pregnancy discrimination by employers is illegal. Prospective employers may not use pregnancy as a factor during the hiring process unless the pregnancy could interfere with a woman's ability to perform the job adequately.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Home Depot is coming to my town, riding in on tracks of gold, courtesy of us taxpayers. This is not merely another of Home Depot's big box stores, mind you, but by gollies, a high-tech data center. To get the giant corporation to choose Austin, state and local officials approached it in the professional manner that corporations now expect. by frantically hurling huge sackfuls of taxpayers' money at them, desperately hoping that our sacks are fuller than those being hurled by other cities. In this case, our sacks contain more than $30 million, and, lucky us, Home Depot grabbed them. Our public officials are now peacocking around over this deal, bragging that they're delivering 500 jobs to we the people, averaging $58,000 a year in pay. Actually, though, you wouldn't get one paying $58K. That average includes the salary, bonuses, and such of those up in the new data center's executive suite. Averages, you see, are tricksters. If you are paid $20,000, for example, and the top dog gets $200,000, you're averaging $110,000 each. Home Depot's package includes nearly $6 million in a special tax break from the Austin School District. Yes, that means $6 million that should go to the education of school kids will not, for district officials have given this corporation an exemption from paying its school taxes. Yet the Austin School Board is trying to pull a fast one on us by asserting that the state reimburses school districts for any revenue they lose when they dole out tax breaks to corporations. As one board member put it, there is no cost to the Austin taxpayer. Earth to school board. The Austin taxpayer is also a state taxpayer. The tax giveaway to Home Depot still comes from our pockets, and it's still $6 million that could have been added to education, but now won't be. This is Jim Hightower saying, Home Depot is super rich. Why shouldn't it pay its taxes like our homegrown businesses do?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, archives at whiterosesociety.org. If you want to drop into our chat room, tomhartman.com. It's Friday, our regular Friday, first hour of our three-hour program, Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders is with us. In 1991, Congressman Sanders became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years. He has since been reelected seven times, the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. If you have a call, you want to comment, thoughts, suggestions, whatever, comments, questions, 1-866-889-8894, the telephone number to be on with Bernie. And Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom, and Happy New Year to all the listeners.
Well, thank you, and the same to you. Yesterday on C-SPAN, I saw you on the floor of the House of Representatives.
And I was yelling too loud. I saw it myself. I should have been a little bit calmer.
Yeah,
well, that's the way it goes.
Well, you know, this whole idea of privatizing our vote, where we've got a real significant chunk of the electorate who have no way of knowing whether their vote actually got counted, and the vast majority of all, I mean, well over 95% of all the voting errors that have been documented, over 100,000 of them so far, all inuring to the benefit of George W. Bush, it's making people crazy.
Well, I think what we wanted to accomplish yesterday, and I think we did to some degree, is bring to the floor of the House this enormous issue of making sure of fighting to fundamentally reform the election system in the United States of America. I mean, as you and I have discussed, and I know you've done a lot of writing on this, and I know you talk about it often, it is insane that in the year 2004, we have people waiting 4 or 5 hours to vote. We have secretaries of state who are highly partisan. And this whole issue of electronic voting without a paper trail is just an issue of enormous concern. And that issue came up a lot yesterday. You know, Tom, last week you asked me a question. We were talking about Rush Holt's bill, which would mandate a paper trail for all electronic voting in the United States. And you asked me if any Republicans were active in it, and I didn't know the answer. The answer is that there is. There's a fellow named Stephen King from Iowa who has introduced a bill which I think is not, as I understand it, not as strong as Holt's bill, but it addresses the issue, and he has a couple of dozen Republican supporters for the bill. My view is that if we can bring the Democrats and Republicans together on this issue, we have a chance to pass legislation that would require a paper trail for any vote cast in America.
Yeah, I just have to add, Bernie, I think we need to take it beyond that. I think we need to deprivatize the vote.
I agree with that.
The whole idea of having privatized the vote is nuts. The software has to be open source, completely transparent, and administered by good old boring civil servants who can be held accountable to we.
I couldn't agree with you more. This intellectual property rights for voting machines is nonsense.
Yeah.
This has got to be public information, and the public has got to control that and make sure that it's absolutely fair. So the issues, what I think, and Jesse Jackson Jr. also made a very good statement yesterday, raising the point that I think many people forget, and that is that voting rights are not really a congressional and national issue. They're very much a state issue.
Right.
And you have states which very, very different laws about who can vote, how they vote, and so forth and so on. And I think the goal of all of this, at least my goal, is to have certain minimum national standards. Doesn't mean to say the federal government has got to run every election all over America, but there's got to be national standards in terms of voting machines, in terms of the appropriate number of them, so people are not waiting online, in terms of absentee ballots and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the direction we're going to be moving in.
And we have moved in that direction in the past. Either the 13th or 15th Amendment begins that problem. I think it's the 13th right. Amendment that gives the vote to African Americans. And then the Voting Rights Act in 1964, 67, whenever that was. And so it's not as if we haven't, at the federal level, interfered in the local vote before.
Absolutely
so,
correct.
So. Okay, and the other thing that I noticed today, two quick things I just want to toss out and give you some red meat here. Today, 25% of working Americans now earn less than $8.70 an hour before taxes. This a quarter of the American workforce. The conservatives are succeeding. They're wiping out the American middle class, Bernie.
This is the issue. And, you know, you and I can go on for 50 hours and listeners can talk about a million issues out there, all of importance. But if you would ask me, at least domestically, and before you get into Iraq or anything else, what the central issue is that is not talked about enough, that certainly the corporate media doesn't talk about, the president will never in a million years mention it, Republicans don't mention it, is what I would call the collapse of the middle class. And this is one indication of it. That has a lot to do with the growing unfair distribution of wealth and income. We are not in a depression in the United States. Money is being made. Where is it going? Is it going to the middle class? Is it going to the working class? Is it going to lower income people? What you just said, and it's worth repeating over and over again, is that but 25% of American workers make what?
Make less than $8.70 an hour.
Well, American, how are you going to, you know, if you're an American family person, how do you take care of a family on that?
Yeah,
that's absurd. And then, meanwhile, healthcare costs are soaring. More and more workers are losing their health insurance. Workers are losing their pensions. This is what is happening in America. It has to do with the growing maldistribution of wealth and income. It is also have to do big time with our disastrous trade policies, which you and I have talked about. You may have read in the last week, Tom, that for the first time now, something that many of us feared, automobiles made in China.
Yes. Yeah.
Are going to be coming.
It was in my stack yesterday to get to. I never got to it on the program, but it was a story that I was going to share with our listeners that the guy who brought the Yugo to America is now bringing, I think it's called Chery is the company. He's bringing the either fifth or ninth largest manufacturer of cars in China is going to start exporting to the United States.
Now, what this could mean, what we know is that General Motors has made a huge expansion of the investment of the companies that they're buying parts from are now being in China.
Right.
And General Motors is doing what Walmart is doing, is forcing their suppliers to go to China to provide them with parts. This is another leap forward, so that if we don't stop it, it will mean that automobile supplies and automobiles themselves will not be manufactured in a significant way in the United States unless we stop that. So it's industry after industry after industry. There was statements made by the former head of Intel, Andy Grove, suggesting that China would be the major IT company in the next couple of decades.
Yeah.
And if those trends continue, you're going to look at an economy in the United States where people are going to be flipping hamburgers, and the good jobs are going to be abroad.
And nothing else. You're absolutely, and this is also a transfer of technology. I mean, these companies go over there looking for cheap labor, and they have to then build the plants, transfer the technology from here to there, teach the people how to use it, teach them how to, and pretty soon the Chinese are saying, hey, we don't need you American companies anymore.
Boeing, for example, you know, when China said that they, you know, over the years that they wanted to purchase airplanes from Boeing, they were very insistent. Yeah, we're going to purchase them, but you know what? You're going to build more and more of those planes here in China.
Yeah.
And China will then become a major airplane manufacturer.
Yeah, they're no dummies. I mean, they're doing
they are not dummies.
They are doing what we did for 200 years. They're protecting their domestic economy.
My criticism is not of the Chinese government. Well, it is, you know, many of their lack of respect for civil liberties and democracy. But basically, my criticism is of corporate America, where these companies got rich on the backs of American consumers. Their products were made by American workers. They received tax breaks and subsidies from the American people. And now what they're saying is, hey, we don't need you anymore. Goodbye. Except please give us a few billion dollars more in handouts, but we're on our way to China big time. And this technology issue that you've raised is huge, because it spills over into military affairs. And whether you're giving technology that at some point in the future may be used against us. And with all of that technology goes more and more good-paying jobs. So this is a huge issue that I think we have got to stay focused on.
Yeah, the conservatives are simply giving away our country. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got a few callers here. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Shelton in Maryland, is on the line. Hey, Shelton.
Hi, Tom. Bernie, thanks for taking my call. Bernie, you're one of the few lawmakers that I admire a lot. And I saw yesterday's exercises kind of a – what I saw was the only effect was to interrupt the pro forma exercise by about 2 hours. It wasn't treated as very important. The senators seemed to take it as an opportunity to mouth some platitudes, and then they all voted except for one to certify. And the reason I think it was presented as not important was that there was nothing in my local paper about it this morning.
And there was nothing in the network news about it last night, Shelton. What's your point, though?
Yeah. Well, my point is that not enough fuss was made to make it an important story.
Well,
and I think
this is the issue, Shelton. Let me be very clear, and there's some listeners who disagree with me. I used yesterday as an opportunity, and I think John Conyers played a very good role in this whole business, to say, and this is my view, others may disagree with me, but I don't believe that Kerry won Ohio. Kerry doesn't believe that he won Ohio. Democratic leaders there, by and large, don't believe it. In fact, nobody on the floor of the House suggested otherwise. But were there irregularities in Ohio? Absolutely. Can we be 100% sure in terms of any electronic voting machine in America? No, we can't. So what I saw yesterday is an opportunity to seize a moment and raise consciousness about the need for fundamental election reform. And Tom and I just a moment ago talked about a number of those issues. And I would hope that all of the listeners will be involved in that, not only in terms of putting pressure on Congress, but at their own level, state levels as well, where state government has a lot of power determining what kind of voting machines are going to be used.
Yeah, and I know I just want to say for the record, I am of the opinion that there was just massive fraud, not just in this election, but in 2002 in Georgia, where all the polls showed Max Cleland winning before and after the election, and yet the voting machines, which produced no paper trail, Georgia had just gone to an all-no paper trail, showed him losing by exactly the proportion that he should have won by. And then Bev Harris hacks into the Diebold website and finds a folder called Rob Georgia on their FTP site. This has still not been investigated by any sort of an investigative agency that has any sort of police authority. And I mean, I'm very concerned, Bernie. I'm very concerned. And I know you don't want to get, hysterical about it, and I respect that. But I got to tell you, I think we've got some big problems here.
Well, I think that the problem is that, as you and I have discussed, it is an outrage and unacceptable that there are no paper trails, that people cannot be guaranteed that in a recount their vote is going to be effectively recounted.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to change the way that we do our voting here in the United States, or we're going to have another. It's going to be like the Ukraine 2 years from now if we don't. If people can't have confidence in it. 20 minutes past the hour, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our regular Friday Brunch with Bernie segment, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to call in, we will be right back.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oreck, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oreck XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oreck XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a 4-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, Thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get Total Choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Tell me over and over and over again, my friend, why you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
No, I don't. There have certainly been times when I thought we were, but not now. Welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. The Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Every Friday, the first hour of our program. Bernie, let's go back to the phone lines here. We've got a bunch of callers here. Dennis in Louisville, Kentucky on the line. Hey, Dennis.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great.
Good.
Great. Let me just preface this by saying that I'm an American of African descent, slavery descent. So I'm going to get this to you. I think the Democratic Party is never going to get its points across as long as we have people with the radical view of the Black Caucus. And, you know, that's why we're losing out the majority. They're holding these guys up as poster childs for the Democratic Party, and it's running off the white males who should be voting for the Democratic Party, especially the blue-collar voters. Mm-hmm. The ones that are losing their jobs overseas and losing their jobs to illegal immigrants, you know, they're not voting for the Democratic Party because they don't see themselves as a part of it. Until we get that under handle or under control, it's not going to happen. We're never going to.
Dennis, what are some of the issues that you think the Black Caucus is too radical on?
Well, first of all, you know, it's the hammering and it's the method that they use. We've been outflanked. In our method of using, you know, yeah, there's definitely civil rights problems and stuff, and there are definitely civil rights things that we should address, and
right.
Perhaps it is voter fraud. However, we still did lose the popular election, and if they want to contest those other states that, you know, Kerry barely won, then we might be in a little bit of trouble there, too. But the thing is, they have got to tone it down a little bit. We've got to be a little bit smarter in the way we do business. We've got to be more diplomatic, and we can't be in your face all the time.
Okay, it's I think really Dennis raises an interesting issue, which I tend to agree with. I don't think it's a question of the Black Caucus being too radical. I think it's a question of what issues we focus on. And I think what Bush and his friends understand is you could take the race issue and you can turn it around. For example, you can appoint a Condoleezza Rice to be Secretary of State.
Right.
Does this mean he is sympathetic to black people? He is certainly not, because a lot of his domestic policies in terms of education, in terms of health care, Social Security, economy, are going to be disastrous for lower-income people and black people. But I think what Dennis's point probably is, if I understand them correctly, is that we've got to focus on those issues that bring people together. They're not just black issues or white issues. They're issues that affect the working class of America, the middle class, the kids of America, and we're in it together. I think there's no way to be too radical in terms of trying to change our trade policy, in terms of raising the minimum wage, in terms of providing health care to all people. But those are issues that unite us, whether you're black, Hispanic, white, Native American, whatever you are, male, female.
They should be at the forefront.
Pardon me?
Those issues should be at the forefront.
I agree with you, Dennis.
And the Democratic Party, let's just face it, we haven't done a good job, you know, starting with Clinton. And, you know, I don't know why we still hail this guy as the great leader of the Democratic Party, but, you know, he alienated us, and he cut our jobs, too. NAFTA's undercutting us.
You got it.
You know, these pensions that we have and stuff, not only are we losing jobs to overseas to Mexico and China now and all these other places that we have free trade agreements with, you know, we're also importing cheap labor into the country, which is driving down wages for regular Americans, too.
All right, Tom, I think Dennis has got it right, and I think it's not a question of not being radical or too radical. It's a question of what issues we focus on. I think we beat Bush by focusing on issues that affect working people, whatever color you are. We bring people together, and we take on the big money interests to run this country. So that makes sense to you, Dennis?
I'm sorry, Dennis just left.
But I think that is what we have to do. We have to bring people together, take on corporate America and the very wealthy who have so much power. That's the way we win, I believe.
Yeah, it's very straightforward. Although the Congressional Black Caucus is concerned about the fact that a large part of the disenfranchisement, setting aside any conspiracy theories in Ohio, was very few voting machines in black districts,
lots and lots of voting machines
in white Republican districts,
10-hour
lines.
But I think Dennis's point is
that's worth complaining about
that issue.
Yeah, I understand that, and he may be right that that's not, you know, that's ultimately not the smartest politics, but that's a whole other thing. Good point, Bernie. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. 29 minutes past the hour. Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. We will be right back.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live? And who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. For the first time in the history of U.S. Airlines, a bankruptcy court has thrown out a union contract as it gave U.S. Airways what it demanded. The International Association of Machinists, representing about 9,000 workers at U.S. Airways, will have to agree to a concessions deal with the airline now or face the loss of its contracts. Workers know that if they reject the voluntary concessions agreement, their entire union contracts will be null and void. Flight attendants at U.S. Airways have approved 10% pay cuts. The machinist union is being hit hard, expected to lose half its jobs in its U.S. Airways mechanics local as a result of the bankruptcy court decision.
In his State of the State speech Wednesday night, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger urged lawmakers to dramatically reform budget priorities. With a deficit above $8 billion, the governor says California has a spending problem, yet he promised to submit a budget next week with no new taxes, while gutting the public employee's retirement package. WIN correspondent Vinny Lombardo has the story.
Accordingly, we must do what businesses have been doing. For new employees, we must move from a defined benefit to a defined contribution system.
Under the current retirement scheme, California employees are guaranteed a set amount. The average worker who retires at age 60 with 19 and a half years of service receives $1,673.82 a month. Dave Lowe, Assistant Director of Governmental Relations with the California School Employees Association, says the governor's proposal is fatally flawed.
What the governor wants to do is change the plan to force all the new employees to gamble their pensions on the stock market. And if they end up gambling badly, what's going to happen? Either they're going to retire in poverty or the taxpayers or the government's going to have to bail them out.
On Thursday, the governor convened a special session of the California legislature to press for tighter reins on spending. If lawmakers don't go along, Schwarzenegger says he'll appeal directly to voters at a special election in June. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
The AFL-CIO says Hadi Salih, the international secretary of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions, will be sorely missed. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney condemned Salih's murder. The Iraqi labor leader was killed by assassins in his Baghdad home.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission reports that over the last 5 years, pregnancy bias complaints have risen by 10%. In 2003, there were more than 4,000 complaints of women being discriminated against because of pregnancy. By law, pregnancy discrimination by employers is illegal. Prospective employers may not use pregnancy as a factor during the hiring process unless the pregnancy could interfere with a woman's ability to perform the job adequately.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Stand up for your rights. And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman here with Congressman Bernie Sanders. 27 minutes before the hour, the Brunch with Bernie segment of our program. 1-866-889-8894. Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Glenn, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Bernie, how are you?
Good.
I spent quite a bit of time yesterday watching the House and the Senate comments and even the Black Caucus comments, and I was... I thought it was a good opportunity to see the broad spectrum of views, but it was fairly disappointing that those that you expressed and those who wanted to focus on the problems in the election were in the minority, and the majority were either these prepared speeches on the issue that on an issue wasn't being brought up by the Democrats, by the Republicans, such as calling it the X-Files Democrat thing and a fantasy and trying to minimize the whole problems or ignoring them entirely. Then you had Democrats like the guy from Minnesota, DeMarc Dayton, who was calling it misguided all the way to those who were truly outraged. And I'm just wondering why people like myself who donated money for the first time, really got involved, shouldn't just give up on the Democratic Party.
Well, you got a couple of issues here. Number one, I'm not a Democrat. I am an independent.
Right.
And within the Democratic Party, and to a lesser degree within the Republican Party, you have wide divergency of views. What the Republicans' goal yesterday, and I did not see the Senate. Obviously, I was more tuned into what was going on in the House, was pretty simple. What the Republicans were trying to do was mock those of us who wanted to discuss this issue. And they say, see, these people, you know, they lose, they can't accept it, they're into conspiracy theories. What a bunch of morons. We have important issues facing America, and these guys just won't accept the opinion of the American people. They want to keep rehashing this. Give it up, folks, you lost. You know, grow up.
Right.
That was what they said in a dozen different ways. I think the theme of yesterday, let me be very frank, okay, and, you know, people will disagree with me, all right? I think, based on what I know, Bush won Ohio. I also think there were severe irregularities in Ohio, and I think there are major problems all over this country. And what I think, as we discussed earlier, what we need, and what, you know, Tom Hartman has been very vocal about, fundamental reform of the election system in terms of the voting machines, that more people were not in the Senate prepared to raise those issues is unfortunate because they must be raised. But the reason they were fearful of it is they were worried that the Republicans are going to make fun of them and make them look stupid. But I think we need more people in the Senate to be demanding fundamental election reform in this country so that everybody who casts the ballot, at the end of the day, you're going to win sometimes, you're going to lose sometimes, but you want to feel absolutely 100% sure your vote was accurately counted.
Yeah, and to Glenn's question of why he should stay with the Democratic Party or any stay involved in politics even.
Of what we have right now, Glenn, and, you know, millions of people have to deal with it. In the Republican Party right now, you have the most right-wing, corporately controlled political party in, if not the history of the United States, certainly in the modern history of this country. In the state of Vermont, I was elected. Mayor Burlington is an independent. I've been elected to Congress as an independent. I'm the only one in the House who has done that. It ain't easy stuff. So people are going to have to make their choice. Certainly the Democratic Party is far preferable to the very right-wing Republican Party. In some areas, people looking at the Green Party, I think you got to look at it day by day and what the circumstances are in your community. But one thing, Glenn, that I do suggest, don't give up. You don't have, as American citizens, now is not the time for anybody to give up on the political process. That is exactly what Karl Rove and the Republican leadership want you to do.
Well said, and thanks for that call, Glenn. 1-866-889-8894. Rick in Michigan is on the line. Hey, Rick.
Yes, good afternoon, Tom and Bernie. I was watching the proceedings in Washington yesterday. I tried to watch a little bit of the Gonzalez hearings, and I was watching the situation at the joint session, and then, of course, Mrs. Boxer and Stephanie Tubbs Jones brought up their objection, and I guess debate ensued for 2 hours in each house. And I didn't watch the whole thing, Bernie, but I noticed on the tote board, I always look for how you vote, and of course you're the one independent. And I guess you said you didn't think that Mr. Bush lost Ohio. You didn't think Mr. Kerry won it. So I guess that's why
right.
You voted no.
That's exactly right.
But I guess I don't find myself often being more more left-wing than you are, Bernie, but I guess I sided more with Tom here. See, I believe very strongly that the Bush family, and I'm talking about all of them, Jeb, George Sr., Neil, the guy that was involved in the SNL, I believe this is a family of gangsters. And I believe people like Karl Rove and all the rest of them, you know, are too. Tom DeLay, I mean, you work with him daily, you know how he is. And I know that this specific issue was actually the Democrats showing more backbone, at least one Democrat, Barbara Boxer, bless her for it, you know, than last time around, when there was absolutely no question in my mind that Mr. Gore won the election. And I'm just wondering how long progressives, Democrats, Greens, whatever you want to call us, we're going to stand by and let these fascist idiots take this country down the road to the way Germany was in the 30s. What can we do to stop it?
Well, I think that what we do to stop it, and I work on this very, very hard, and in the state of Vermont, you know, we do some things that I think the country might want to look at, not that we, you know, do it perfectly. In this state, and not by accident, by the way, Bush lost the state by 20 points. In this state, we have three representatives in Congress, two senators and a congressman, none of whom are Republicans. And in this last election, the Democrats in the state and the legislature regained control of the House and have strong majorities in both the House and the Senate. We have a moderate Republican governor and a moderate to conservative lieutenant governor. But one of the things that we do to answer your question, Rick, it gets back to the question that Dennis asked earlier in the program, and that's called how do you do politics? It's not enough to say we're not going to tolerate this. The question is how do you bring people together? Karl Rove is a genius. He knows how to play people off against each other. He knows how to be a demagogue. He knows how to code language in a certain way. The fact that there are millions and millions of working people who today are working longer hours for low wages, can't afford to send their kids to college, have no health care, have seen their jobs go to China, they are voting for George Bush. And if we don't solve that problem, I predict that the country will only be in worse shape. So our challenge is, as I mentioned earlier, is to figure out ways to bring people together. I happen to believe that, you know, I don't want to go over this issue again. I think the vote I cast yesterday was the proper vote. But the issues that we bring people together on, how do you make an economy that works for all people, health care for all people, protecting our environment, those are the issues that you bring people together on.
Well said. 1-866-889-8894. Mark in Tennessee on the line. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey. Hi, Tom and Bernie. Bernie, I want to thank you for getting up and speaking, but I'm not happy with your vote on certifying the election. You really feel like Bush won, but you're not taking into account that the vote was actually hacked in the touchscreen machines and in the tabulators. They actually were, and Bush actually lost the election.
Well, I appreciate your point of view, Mark. That is not my point of view.
Yeah,
I know that's not your point of view, but
I
wish
appreciate
you would
your point. And if you listen carefully to the debate, at least in the House, I don't believe that there is any person who got up there who also believed that.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the Democrats in Ohio believe that. So, I mean, you're entitled to your point of view. John Kerry doesn't agree with you. And, you know, I stand by my vote, and I think I was right.
Susan in California on the line. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi. I have to say I agree with the folks who've called in. I think that there's a trend to minimize the implication of fraud and illegal actions that took place in Ohio, whether it was by the Republican legislators who stressed that the sore loser aspect, or by the Democrats, including you, Bernie, saying that you don't believe Kerry won. It doesn't make any sense because Conyers has a whole, you know, book, a load of evidence and allegations, which are allegations, that there was fraud in this election. And nobody is looking at that. You're looking at your belief system. You're saying, I believe.
Actually, I read the document, and if you listen to Mr. Conyers yesterday at his press conference, he did not. You know, you might want to have John on the show, Tom, but
I did last week.
Well, I think you're all being politically expedient.
No, I'm not being politically expedient. You may disagree with me, but, you know, I would say that the vast majority of the people in my state and my district agree with me. And I think the people who are on the floor of the House.
The evidence is never examined. How do we know?
Okay. Well, thank you for your thoughts.
I think we need it examined, and I'm really proud of Boxer for standing up and actually doing what she believed in. What was the point of doing that if people didn't
go with it? It raised the issue, Susan. And as Bernie said, I think that that's the critical thing. It's really important that that was done. Bill in New York, you're on the line with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, how you doing? I want to thank you guys for standing up and saying something, but again, I agree with other people that I think you should have voted against it. My other thing is that I want to say is that I think the Democrats have really got to stop being afraid, come forward, and stand for what the party stands for instead of keep behaving like Republican light. Because people keep seeing you behaving like that and going, well, why should I vote for the Republican light
Bill,
party?
Let me ask you this. I agree with you. I'm not a Democrat, but I do agree with you. What are the issues that you think the Democrats are acting light on and should be much more aggressive on?
Well, I think it's this whole voting issue where I think
you think that is the issue that's going to bring people together and defeat George Bush?
Not so much in defeating George Bush. It's the fact that the voting machines are the problem and they have to be addressed. What happened was by not really going forward aggressively at it, if you look at what you brought up, yeah, it got brought up, but it got squashed in mainstream media as just being something, oh, poo-poo. I mean, you were relegated to just a little crawl screen on most news stations of saying there was a minor problem yesterday. This is only the second time in the history of the country that this happened, but it's relegated to a crawl as a minor problem.
And from a political perspective, Bill, how do you think that we change that? How does that have to do with who owns the media, with the role of the FCC and the Bush administration? In other words, my point, and the point that I'm going to keep reiterating, if we're serious about politics, then we have to be serious about beating George Bush and Republican control of the Congress. And you have to raise issues that bring people together to do that. If you're thinking that the key issue that we have to deal with is voting machines, I think electoral reform is one of the issues, but there are many other issues out there.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot, Bill. I appreciate the call. Bernie, how do you feel about the exit polls showing that Kerry won, and by the same percentage, essentially, actually within 1 point of what Yushchenko, the exit polls in Ukraine showed Yushchenko won, and it was a huge, big media hoop-de-doop about the fact that the exit polls showed Yushchenko won, but there's been virtually no discussion about the exit polls showing Kerry.
Well, there has been some discussion. I mean, I don't have the paper in front of me, so maybe we'll postpone that discussion to another time. But
I think that's what's driving most of these folks.
Well, I think it's you've got a certain segment of people who feel, and we're hearing them today, who feel very strongly about it. I've voiced my opinion, but the main point that I want to make is our country today is in the control of a very right-wing government controlled by large corporate interests. And the question that I deal with every day from a political perspective is how do you bring people together to defeat those folks? And I'm not hearing a whole lot of discussion on that from listeners.
Yeah.
It has to do, in my mind, with the first issue that we deal with, the collapse of the middle class. There are a lot of people out there who vote for George Bush who are in a lot of economic problems. How do we reach out to those people? As I've said a dozen times here, I think electoral reform is an enormously important issue. We have to guarantee that every vote cast in this country is accurately counted. But it's not the only issue.
Yeah,
millions of people, it is not a big issue.
I'm right there with you. We've got a bunch more calls. And as you know, we don't screen calls here. We just, ask them for the name of the city. So what you're getting is what we're getting here. Craig in Charlottesville, Virginia on the line. Hey, Craig, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom, Bernie.
Hi.
How you doing?
What's up?
Good.
I heard a caller on Randy's show last night that made what I thought was a very good question as to how to circumvent the voting machines, the long lines, and maybe 90% of the fraud, and that was to have everyone vote by absentee ballot.
By mail.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one small problem with that, two small problems with that. One in Washington State where you can vote by mail. One of the election polls reported that they had found a whole bunch of ballots that all looked like they were You know, they all had, they were just the presidential vote was on them. They got counted, no other votes. In other words, there was an implication of fraud. And the other is, you know, I know it works wonderfully in Oregon, but I'm wondering, you know, would you have a black market in ballots? I mean, you've got Bloomberg paid $97 a vote to become mayor of New York City. For probably $5 a ballot, you could create a black market in ballots. So I'm
not to say that there wouldn't be other problems like that that like might arise from it, but I think it would really go a long way to creating a paper trail and maybe circumventing a lot of the problems that we saw in this election.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think one of the things that listeners might want to do is we're going to work, some of us anyhow, are going to work as hard as we can in Congress. And by the way, I got after I was up on the floor yesterday, a fellow who I know pretty well, a conservative Republican, came up to me and said, you know, you're absolutely right about these voting machines. We need to change that. And you have a number of Republicans who have that concern. I think ultimately people, you know, no one wants to lose, but at least when you lose, you want to know the other guy really beat you. And I would suggest that we continue that fight, not only in Congress, but at the state legislature as well. And I think many legislators and Secretary of State are beginning to get the message. I would hope that listeners will contact their own Secretary of State in their own legislatures to say, hey, no voting machines unless there is a paper trail.
Yeah, my sense of it is, Bernie, that there's this huge thing bubbling under the surface here in America that the corporate media and the corporate press just are not going near. Our phone lines are still all lit up, and we'll see, but I'm guessing that this is, we'll see. 10 minutes before the hour, we got to take a break. But it's Congressman Bernie Sanders, Brunch with Bernie. We'll be right back.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
The differences between snowflakes are intriguing and important to scientists. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio.
It's said that no two snowflakes are alike, and photographer Pat Belling confirms it. Belling has taken pictures of snowflakes for the past 23 years. She first became interested after seeing a book of photographs by Wilson Bentley, a turn-of-the-century photographer. Belling, who works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, says the study of individual flakes goes back even further than Bentley. The renowned scientist Robert Hooke first observed and documented them under a rudimentary microscope in the 17th century, but Bentley's photographs of snowflakes made him famous, and his passion for documenting the differences between individual flakes intrigued scientists. Meteorologists have since learned that the shape of a snowflake depends on a number of factors. All snowflakes have six sides because of the way water molecules organize as they form ice crystals, but the way each snowflake turns out depends mostly on temperature and pressure. For example, Belling says the most intricate snowflakes form at higher humidity.
Depending on where it is in the cloud and the water vapor pressure as it goes dancing through the cloud and the temperature, it spreads out into all of its leafiness and the pretty complex pieces, or depending again on those conditions, it stays in just that hexagon. Sometimes it's a three-dimensional column, and then other times you get the pellets.
Snow enthusiasts like Belling know what shape snowflakes are going to be as soon as they step out into the cold. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, it's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's independent congressman, on the line with us. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Kaz in northern Michigan on the line. Hey, Kaz.
All right, Tom. Bernie?
How are you?
Terrible. Really disgusted with what's going on, and I was kind of dropped down by that vote yesterday. But one of the first things I think that needs to be done is the Truth and Fairness in Reporting Act has to be reinstated, which was one of the very first things that Ronald Reagan did when he got in office.
You mean the Fairness Doctrine?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is what done more damage to this country, I feel, from that time on than anything that these filthy Republicans have done.
So you see this as a problem of a failure of the media. Bernie, your thoughts?
Well, I think Kaz makes a very good point. There is going to be an effort, which I will be part of, to address the entire media issue, and that is to see how we can stop Bush's effort to deregulate media, which will leave us with a tiny, tiny handful of large media conglomerates controlling what we see, hear, and read. We're going to be working to try to stop that. Also, I think the Kaz's point about the Fairness Doctrine and the repeal of that being very important, because what that has allowed to take place is a lot of these right-wing guys then can say anything on radio, can say anything they want, they can attack anybody in any way, and that they are not obliged in any way to allow a response. So I agree that there should be a Fairness Doctrine. I know that it will pose some problems for the radio stations, but I think it's a lot better than what we have right now, which is right-wing radio just attacking people and people not having a chance to respond.
Well, you know, it would be the ultimate irony is if the Fairness Doctrine came in just in time to suppress left-wing radio. Okay, let's go to Dave in Humboldt County. Dave, you're live. We've got about a minute left.
Okay, good morning. Bernie, when you say you don't believe the Democrats won in Ohio, are you saying you don't believe in exit polls? Are you saying that you don't believe the Republicans stuck us with these unverifiable machines? Are you saying you don't believe...
Dave, let me tell you what I'm saying. I'm saying that John Kerry had $15 million in the bank prepared to fight for recounts and everything else. That John Kerry has a bunch of lawyers who are very aggressive and very good, and they analyzed the situation and thought that they were not going to win in Ohio. And if that's what John Kerry believes, I'll accept that.
So it's good enough for him. It's good enough. And that makes a certain amount of sense, I have to say. Unfortunately, it's for.
I mean, it's not like John Kerry is a wimp who was not prepared to fight. He was criticized for keeping, what was it, $15 million in the bank precisely to fight if he had to
for
the legal battles of the recount
issue. Yeah.
He looked at the evidence, and they thought not.
Okay. It's Congressman Bernie Sanders, bernie.house.gov, his website. Thank you very much, Bernie, for being with us today.
Good.
And we'll
good
see you next week.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye now. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where being progressive never felt so good.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. For the first time in the history of U.S. Airlines, a bankruptcy court has thrown out a union contract as it gave U.S. Airways what it demanded. The International Association of Machinists, representing about 9,000 workers at U.S. Airways, will have to agree to a concessions deal with the airline now or face the loss of its contracts. Workers know that if they reject the voluntary concessions agreement, their entire union contracts will be null and void. Flight attendants at U.S. Airways have approved 10% pay cuts. The machinist union is being hit hard, expected to lose half its jobs in its U.S. Airways mechanics local as a result of the bankruptcy court decision.
In his State of the State speech Wednesday night, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger urged lawmakers to dramatically reform budget priorities. With a deficit above $8 billion, the governor says California has a spending problem, yet he promised to submit a budget next week with no new taxes, while gutting the public employees' retirement package. WIN correspondent Vinny Lombardo has the story.
Accordingly, we must do what businesses have been doing. For new employees, we must move from a defined benefit to a defined contribution system.
Under the current retirement scheme, California employees are guaranteed a set amount. The average worker who retires at age 60 with 19 and a half years of service receives $1,673.82 a month. Dave Lowe, Assistant Director of Governmental Relations with the California School Employees Association, says the governor's proposal is fatally flawed.
What the governor wants to do is change the plan to force all the new employees to gamble their pensions on the stock market. And if they end up gambling badly, what's going to happen? Either they're going to retire in poverty or the taxpayers and the government's going to have to bail them out.
On Thursday, the governor convened a special session of the California legislature to press for tighter reins on spending. If lawmakers don't go along, Schwarzenegger says he'll appeal directly to voters at a special election in June. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
The AFL-CIO says Hadi Saleh, the international Secretary of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions, will be sorely missed. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney condemned Saleh's murder. The Iraqi labor leader was killed by assassins in his Baghdad home.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission reports that over the last 5 years, pregnancy bias complaints have risen by 10%. In 2003, there were more than 4,000 complaints of women being discriminated against because of pregnancy. By law, pregnancy discrimination by employers is illegal. Prospective employers may not use pregnancy as a factor during the hiring process unless the pregnancy could interfere with a woman's ability to perform the job adequately.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Am I the only one who thinks it's a teeny bit ironic that a visit to the Statue of Liberty, a world-renowned symbol of America's freedoms, now requires us visitors to surrender a piece of our freedom? The founders knew from hard experience with the British Crown that the protection of individual privacy from the prying eye of authorities was essential for any country striving to be the land of the free. Your personal matters and movements are supposed to be just that, personal, beyond the reach of either government or corporate snoops. But a creeping and increasingly creepy intrusion industry is pushing aggressively into our everyday lives, bolstered by government laws and money. Everything from your travel to your purchases are tracked by massive networks of computers. And now, they want not merely data, but little personal pieces of us. Our fingerprints, facial features, the iris patterns of our eyes. To go up into the Statue of Liberty, for example, you now must store your backpacks and such in public lockers. Fine. But rather than the uncomplicated, unobtrusive system of old, put your bag in a locker, drop a coin, take the key, and go, the new system requires that you touch an electronic reader that scans your fingerprint. This means that your own digit is now the key for getting back your bag, and the key for what else? Oh, say the operators, trust us. We don't send your print to the authorities. Really? How do we know that? Various government agencies are now authorized to seize our library records or banking information. Why should they not feel equally free to grab our biometric data? This is Jim Hightower saying, indeed, your digit is going commercial. Piggly Wiggly, Thriftway, and Kroger are among the corporations already beginning to ask that we use our fingerprints rather than credit cards to make purchases. It's taking away our privacy, one finger at a time.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Here's the bottom line issue. I've been trying to imagine. Well, first of all, I want to thank everybody who called in the last hour, and made the comments that they did. Bernie is my congressman, so I get to make my point. But the point that he made, I think, is one that we all have to come to grips with. We all being anybody who is willing to have any affiliation whatsoever with the Democratic Party. I mean, I'm trying to imagine if I were a member of Congress, and just to put yourself in this position for a minute. You're a member of Congress. Now, Bernie isn't even a Democrat, so he doesn't have loyalty to the party that he has to worry about, right? Say you're a Democratic member of Congress. And your candidate for president has said, no, I didn't win that state. No, I'm not going to contest that vote. What do you do? I mean, obviously, I believe the people, the members of the Congressional Black Caucus who stood up and those who stood with them showed tremendous courage, and Barbara Boxer as well. And my feeling right now toward Barbara Boxer is that she's you know, my candidate for president next time. You know, I just have tremendous respect for her for doing that. And yet, where was John Kerry? Where was the candidate? And this in my mind, and you know, I spoke very well of John Kerry during the election. I had high hopes for this man. And he still apparently believes that he'll be able to run in 4 years for president again. And maybe he will. Maybe my voice, maybe this perspective is some weird, wacky, wild conspiracy nut theory, whatever. Maybe. Maybe I represent a very, very small minority, but somehow I suspect not. I have a feeling that there are a lot of Democrats out there who are saying either, on the one hand, Kerry really did his homework and his lawyers really did their homework and they really checked this thing out and he really did lose Ohio fair and square, in which case I would say John Kerry has done probably the worst job of public relations in the history of the world because he hasn't convinced us of that. Or he's saying, well, maybe I won, maybe I didn't, I'm not really sure, and I'm going to let you guys all fight it out, and I'm going to go off to Iraq. In which case, he's not exhibiting the kind of leadership skills that I would want in a president of the United States. Am I being too harsh? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Is this a failure of leadership on Kerry's part, Kate? Hey, Kate in Arcata, California.
Hi, Tom. You must have been reading my mind, because this is exactly what the point is to me, a failure of leadership on Kerry's point. Because from my perspective, this has really got me heated up now, but from my perspective, we're too focused on winning and losing in this country, and I was disappointed. Of course, I agree with Bernie about the need to be united on issues that matter to everybody, but to me, the point about the election is, and the failure of leadership on Kerry's part, is that the issue is not, I didn't win, so I'm leaving. The point is, we needed a leader who would fight for the vote to be counted, who would fight for people's, for the true bottom line issue of democracy that's at stake here.
Or, and alternatively, Kate, if he really and truly in his heart believed that the vote had been counted, would fight to convince us of that.
Exactly,
I
right.
Mean, one
it's
or
like,
the other.
It's, so
it's like,
tough.
It's like he's going right down the middle. And here I am sounding like Rush Limbaugh talking about John Kerry, but...
I know. The fact that he didn't fight for one of the perspectives, it suggests to me, and I hate to say this because I didn't feel this before, but I do now, that he is so self-involved, and that people who are involved in politics in a certain way, who don't have a larger view of things, are only concerned with their own winning and losing. It seems to be kind of it's what Bush has been accused of, and Karl Rove, win at any cost. I mean, if you lose, you take your marbles and go. What about the bigger picture?
Yeah.
That's what Profiles and Courage is all about.
Yeah. Well, I think it very much is time now, Kate, for us to, as the old phrase went from the Clinton impeachment hearings, to move on. And for me, moving on means moving on beyond John Kerry as well.
Absolutely. And defining what it is we want in a leader. And what I want in a leader is someone who will fight for the bigger issues and won't be concerned about his own or her own reputation as though they're the most important people in the world. Nobody's indispensable. We need people to fight for the issues, the bottom line issues.
Yeah. And that's what Bernie is doing. I have to say, he's
well, I agree. He
day
did.
In and day out. And how can he? And that it really hit me at the very end of the show. And I wish he'd said that at the beginning of the
I
show
do
because
too.
it was an epiphany for me.
Yes.
How can he stand up and vote to say no, we think John Kerry really won when John Kerry himself is not saying that. How could anybody stand up and say that?
I agree. And the fact that that woman caller said, well, you're just saying you believe John Kerry won. Nobody knows for sure. That's what the whole issue is about. And that really does put our democracy at stake. And it doesn't seem that, see, it really seems to me, and I've said it already, but that people are more concerned, not necessarily Bernie, but I think there was a fallacy in what Bernie said at the very end. I think that revealed a fallacy in his thinking, which I usually never find. But I lost my train of thought. But it had
to do with certification of the vote. And John Kerry's lawyers are saying the vote is legitimate, then what purpose would be served by saying no, it was illegitimate, other than registering a protest? I believe it was illegitimate. Okay, I have looked carefully at the evidence, and I've talked to a lot of the people who've been there, and which is not the situation for the majority of members of Congress. But apparently John Conyers, you look at John Conyers' speech yesterday. John Conyers didn't say that he thought that John Kerry won Ohio. I mean, the protest that even John Conyers, who was there on the ground, and Stephanie Tubbs, Tubbs Johnson, is it? I'm constantly forgetting her very last name. Jones. The position that they were taking, again, was that the system was corrupted, the system was ripped off, but nonetheless, John Kerry lost. That's a tough one. But anyhow, I think without the leadership of John Kerry, we have just a failure of leadership here. Kate, I got to move along. Thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
I appreciate it. Well said. 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Sarasota, Florida. I'm sure you have a thought on this, Armin.
I have a lot of thoughts.
Yeah.
I want to say something back first, if I may, about the Bush crime family.
Yes, sir.
My observation is it's very simplistic. See, I'm down here at the ground. Okay, I'm just a little person. I don't have a lot of power. Maybe not even any. I don't know. And I observe a lot, and I study a lot, and I research a lot, and I listen a lot, and I look at a lot of different angles. And I've concluded that it's not really Karl Rove. He may take credit, but he's a nobody, really, in my opinion. I think the power of the Bush crime family's forthright lies, and I'd say lies, with the L-I-E-S, between corporate religion and big corporate media.
Yeah.
And that's going to be tough to overcome.
It's going to be very tough to overcome because it's going to require us to change a belief structure in America, which has been changed over the last 30 years. 30 years ago and before that, we had in America a belief that there were some things that government actually did better than the private sector did, that government ran police departments better than a private sector would, and we had seen, I mean, people of my grandfather's generation remembered, you know, when the Pinkerton Army was really, you know, they go out and beat up strikers. It was a mercenary force. That private police forces weren't necessarily a good thing.
Tom?
Let me just finish this here, Armin, and I'll let you talk.
Ahead.
No problem. But we have been convinced over the last 20 years or so by billions of dollars from right-wing think tanks that all things government are evil. Ronald Reagan ran against government. Even when he ran for re-election, he ran against government. And there is an entire generation that has grown up that has no recollection of what this country was like before Reagan was president. That was 24 years ago. They have simply no recollection of it. They were little kids at the time. And now they're out in the workforce. They're making decisions. They're voting. And they are going to be, how do you inform these folks that, for example, Social Security is run very, very competently with only 1% overhead because these wonderful boring bureaucrats are doing it. And when they're saying, oh, government, private industry can be so much more efficient. Well, yeah, they might be able to wring a little more efficiency out of it by cutting the salaries of some of the people, but it's not ultimately going to be more efficient because they got to pay the CEOs, they got to pay the dividends to the stockholders, they've got to pay the corporate headquarters and the marketing.
I understand, Tom.
How do we change that mind? Because what you're talking about, Armin, is that we've got to shift. We've got to create a fundamental paradigm shift in America.
We have to get more balance in the media. If we don't get more balance in the media, I think that's the way to spill off into the religion that's for all practical purposes, is too much corporatized.
Okay, well, here's how to get balance in the media, Armin, and if, because I don't have any hope that we're going to see the Fairness Act return, and I'm not even sure that would be a good idea, frankly. I'm going to disagree with Bernie on that. I think that the way to get balance back in the media is for people who like radio shows and television shows and whatever, any kind of programming that is presenting a point of view, you know, whatever it may be. I mean, the right has been very, very good at saying, yes, we love what Rush Limbaugh is saying, and therefore we're going to let his sponsors know, we're going to let his radio stations know, and we're going to let other people know. If listeners to this program, if listeners to Air America Radio, if listeners to Ed Schultz, if listeners to the occasional NPR program that really takes on corporate America, if listeners to Bill Moyer's show, which is David Brancaccio, if those folks would get active and aggressive, people who, and as well as the alternative media, people who read the Progress Report, people who read Common Dreams, people who read Buzz Flash, people who listen, they say, we're going to have a couple of these editors on this afternoon for our best of the rest of this of the news segment. If you folks would get, if we all, because I, you know, I'm a consumer of this stuff as well as a producer of it, if we all would get more outspoken, call the sponsors and say, even if you're not going to buy the product, call the sponsors and say, I want you to know that I have heard your message, and someday I may buy your product and pass it along, and I'm calling you because I agree with or because I appreciate the fact that you're sponsoring this program. And see, here's the ironic thing. Some folks will call and say, I heard you sponsoring Rush Limbaugh. I hate you. And the sponsors go, oh, you heard our ad. Right. So it's like it's really interesting. I mean, even people who call who disagree, sponsors love it. Yes.
Well,
yes.
We got
20 seconds. Go for it.
You're saying add lobbying to the what I say is education and your ability to boycott.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well said, Armin. Well said. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is the way to get active is to get active, not just complaining, but speaking out. And if you want to change the media, you've got to engage the media. And the money behind the media is the sponsors. That's where it goes. 20 minutes after the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Vasilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartmann program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomharpin.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Sick and tired of feeling famous from outside, short-sighted, narrow-minded, misinterpreted. All I want is the truth.
Yeah, the truth would be useful once in a while. Welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We have a number of callers on the line, and we'll get to you in just a few minutes. First, I want to hear our report for the day, our update from the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. What's going on in our nation's capital? Ellen Ratner, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much. Of course, we're done with the election at this point, and looks like we are semi-done
with
the hearings yesterday on Capitol Hill. They may have one more day. That's still being negotiated. However, today the president had a little Q&A with reporters. He was asked about Brent Scowcroft, who, as you know, was National Security Advisor under Bush 1, and how the elections in Iraq would probably deepen the conflict and increase the divisions between the Shiites and the Sunnis. And essentially, the president said, quite the opposite. I think elections will be an incredibly hopeful experience for the Iraqi people. These are people who live in a society where if they don't toe the line of leadership, they'd be tortured, killed, or maimed. So, and then he was asked, well, will the election be legitimate if some Iraqis can't vote because of the violence? And then he said, 14 of the 18 provinces are relatively calm. 4 of the 18 provinces are places where the terrorists are trying to stop people from voting. If I were a reporter who would be allowed to ask a question, and although we cover the White House, we've never been allowed to ask a question in public of the president, although we ask of Scott all the time, I would ask then, why is it that so much of the military has to travel by helicopter because you can't get around on any streets?
Well, you know, I think it was Paul Krugman today in his column in the New York Times pointed out that George W. Bush has a policy in his cabinet meetings that he doesn't want anybody to tell him bad news about Iraq. It's not allowed to be spoken in his presence. So it may be that he just doesn't know.
Well, remember, he's the one that said he doesn't read the newspaper because he doesn't want his news filtered. He gets it directly from Condoleezza Rice and
right.
other people.
Right.
So
I mean,
what can I say?
Yeah,
I'm sure he didn't read the Krugman column.
This is, the Emperor's New Clothes. This is like the boy kings of France. I'm speechless. Anyhow.
A couple other quick things.
Sure.
On Social Security, the president is going to be giving a major speech next week. I don't know where or when, but we know it's going to be major. And then Secretary Snow of the Treasury is going to be traveling around to tout that. And also the president today has a tax reform team, not exactly liberal, Senator Connie Mack, Republican from Florida, a former senator, and former Senator John Breaux of Louisiana, certainly often a swing vote. That is his bipartisan group to take a look at tax reform.
His bipartisan. And what do you think they're going to recommend, Ellen?
You know, I just have no idea. They said nothing is off the table. One is they're supposed to figure out ways to simplify the tax code, but they're not taking anything off the table, including things such as a consumption tax.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that during the campaign, George W. Bush said that, you know, the rich don't pay taxes anyway because they can always hire CPAs, so why should we bother trying to tax them? I couldn't believe it when he said that in during the campaign that didn't get more play. It was a one-day story. You know, the rich don't, you know, they can always get out of paying taxes anyway. So let's just tax the middle class and the working poor. I mean, you know, and this is the whole flat tax thing. I mean, it's bizarre. It's absolutely bizarre. Is the story about the memo that got leaked yesterday about Social Security that we're going to have to cut Social Security benefits 20, 30, maybe even 50% for people who are in their 20s and 30s now? Is that getting
the White House will only say that various thoughts on these memos are just that, they're thoughts. I mean, they won't commit to anything.
Yeah, so they're just hiding under the you know, stick around. They got to do a few more polls. They've got to do a few, you know, incredible.
Exactly. You got it.
Ellen, thanks so much. Ellen
Have
Ratner.
A great weekend, Tom.
You too, Ellen. You have a wonderful weekend. Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much for the ongoing information. Always interesting to find out what's going on in that wild and wacky city of Washington, D.C. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We will be right back with your calls and more news, including the notice of revocation of independence just delivered to the United States. We'll fill you in on that in a second.
You've supported her through every accomplishment in her life.
Cross, pull, I tied my shoes.
While your ultimate goal is to teach her to stand on her own.
Let go, let go. I can do it.
There are things she just can't do without your support.
There were drugs and alcohol at the party.
Talk with the teens in your life. And if they're in substance abuse treatment and recovery, support them. Help them turn the hardest thing they've ever done into their greatest accomplishment. For information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. For the first time in the history of U.S. Airlines, a bankruptcy court has thrown out a union contract as it gave U.S. Airways what it demanded. The International Association of Machinists, representing about 9,000 workers at U.S. Airways, will have to agree to a concessions deal with the airline now or face the loss of its contracts. Workers know that if they reject the voluntary concessions agreement, their entire union contracts will be null and void. Flight attendants at U.S. Airways have approved 10% pay cuts. The machinist union is being hit hard, expected to lose half its jobs in its U.S. Airways mechanics local as a result of the bankruptcy court decision.
In his State of the State speech Wednesday night, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger urged lawmakers to dramatically reform budget priorities. With a deficit above $8 billion, the governor says California has a spending problem, yet he promised to submit a budget next week with no new taxes, while gutting the public employees' retirement package. WIN correspondent Vinny Lombardo has the story.
Accordingly, we must do what businesses have been doing. For new employees, we must move from a defined benefit to a defined contribution system.
Under the current retirement scheme, California employees are guaranteed a set amount. The average worker who retires at age 60 with 19 and a half years of service receives $1,673.82 a month. Dave Lowe, Assistant Director of Governmental Relations with the California School Employees Association, says the governor's proposal is fatally flawed.
What the governor wants to do is change the plan to force all the new employees to gamble their pensions on the stock market. And if they end up gambling badly, what's going to happen? Either they're going to retire in poverty or the taxpayers or the government's going to have to bail them out.
On Thursday, the governor convened a special session of the California legislature to press for tighter reins on spending. If lawmakers don't go along, Schwarzenegger says he'll appeal directly to voters at a special election in June. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
The AFL-CIO says Hadi Sali, the international secretary of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions, will be sorely missed. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney condemned Sali's murder. The Iraqi labor leader was killed by assassins in his Baghdad home.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission reports that over the last 5 years, pregnancy bias complaints have risen by 10%. In 2003, there were more than 4,000 complaints of women being discriminated against because of pregnancy. By law, pregnancy discrimination by employers is illegal. Prospective employers may not use pregnancy as a factor during the hiring process unless the pregnancy could interfere with a woman's ability to perform the job adequately.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. In just a minute, we're going to have our best of the rest of the news segment. We're going to get a couple of folks in the media on to talk with you, talk with me, talk about what's going on. But first, let's take a few phone calls here. Florian in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Florian, what's on your mind?
Yes, Tom. Your comments with regard to John Kerry bailing out on the thing. Wednesday afternoon, I received an email. I've been a Kerry supporter, okay, received an email asking that we demand Congress committed to reform the electoral system, okay?
Uh-huh.
And supposedly this email was sent out to 3 million people.
Florian, I'm not sure why, but I'm getting a wild feedback here. Are you on a regular phone? Can you just be talking right up to the phone?
The only thing I have is the wireless.
Okay. Well, anyhow, make your point quickly then, because it's busting up.
It was sent out, as they said, to about 3 million people, and asking them to call their congressional leaders to hold full hearings. And he's given Haskert's telephone number and Frist.
Yeah.
I've been trying for 2 days to get through to Haskert's on this number with no success. So they've either disconnected the phone or they're taking a lot of calls.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's interesting. I'm not quite sure what to make of it, Florian, and I've got to drop you. I'm sorry. The feedback is killing us. Maybe you had a radio on in the background. I'm not sure. David Swanson, who's the media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association, the ILCA, and board member for Progressive Democrats for America, is on the line. David was reporting yesterday from Washington, D.C. Hey, David, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. We've got a couple of callers on the line at the moment, too. Let's get some of them on the phone and hear what they have to say. We've been talking about the election here for the last hour and a half, basically. We had Bernie Sanders on for the first hour, and every single person who called wanted to talk about what happened yesterday in Congress with regard to the vote. And I know that you've shared with us your points of view on that. I want to get more of that from you, but let's clear out some of these phone lines first, okay?
Sure.
Okay. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Kitty in Tennessee is on the line. Hey, Kitty.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
I actually just started your show here, listening to your show a little while ago. I just got home. About John Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a particular big fan of his, but I preferred Dennis Kucinich and Howard Dean and John Edwards, but he got the nomination and I supported him. And I feel like this, that if the Democratic Party doesn't go back to the way it's supposed to be, I'm going to register as an independent. I'm giving them 6 months.
Yeah.
Because they have been corporatized to the point that they're just like Republican light. And
yeah.
I'm appalled at Senator Kerry not being there, even if he didn't say anything, just to be there.
Yeah, I agree with you, and this goes back to the Democratic Leadership Council, in my opinion, to the DLC, to Bill Clinton's idea of let's bring the corporations in because that's where the money is, and he may have been able to justify that in 1992 when there really was no other way to get money, but Howard Dean has shown us, and this last election, John Kerry did it successfully.
Yes.
You can raise money from average people like you and me on the internet. We all kick in 25, 50 bucks, something like that, and it adds up to millions.
Right.
And elections can be won, and campaigns can be carried out successfully without the use of corporate money, without having to suck up to corporate interests. And And these bizarre situations where Arnold Schwarzenegger says that a teachers union or a consumer, you know, a group that represents consumers or represents the environment is a special interest group, but a corporation that wants to give him money is a constituent.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, this is like, you can't say it's because English isn't his first language. It's because he's another corrupt Republican, and now the even though he's in favor of abortion rights, so the Republicans are all getting freaked out about him. But I mean, it is time for the Democrats to take back their party. I absolutely agree.
There's something I wanted to ask if you noticed yesterday. Were you watching when they got ready to start the counting of the electors?
No, I wasn't.
A courier came in with a large manila envelope, and it was announced that it was a personal message from President Bush, and he handed it to Dick Cheney. And I noticed, and I was totally appalled at the speeches in the House that the Republicans gave.
Right.
The way they denigrated
Yeah, they were basically
anyone.
Making fun of people, yeah.
They wouldn't even respond to what the allegations were by the Democrats. And I don't know, but I kind of have an idea that in that package were the instructions on how to handle this situation.
Interesting.
Because they all sounded like they were drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, everybody was on point. I mean, they had planned for this, and they knew what they were going to say.
Thank you for talking to me, and I'm going to call you back because the other day when you were talking about the tsunami and the earthquake and drilling and global warming in the mangrove forest, I got interested and did some research on it.
Okay, great. We'll talk about that some other time. Thanks,
Kitty. Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Kitty. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. David, your thoughts on Kitty's comments?
Well, I supported the candidates that she did, but I think that what happened yesterday gives a lot of hope that many in the Democratic Party, including the leadership, may be moving in the right direction. And the Progressive Democrats of America, which was built out of the Kucinich campaign and the Dean campaign and brought some of these candidates together, did a lot of the work along with Congressman John Conyers and the Progressive Caucus to make that happen, and are now pushing for Dean for the DNC chairmanship. And things are starting to move in the right direction. But I agree that you have to have a third party option to be able to push one of the two parties in a positive direction. So we need the Greens, and the Greens were heroes in Ohio, and David Cobb, without him, nothing would have happened. So we need the Greens, we need the Labor Party, we need the Working Families Party.
Yeah, and we need instant runoff voting to make it so that they don't end up shooting each other when we're trying to, you know what I'm talking about. So we don't end up in these friendly fire situations.
And Harry Reid is going to have an election reform bill. That needs to be in it.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, Bob Fitrakis was going to be on with you. We usually for this segment we get on two folks. He's with FreePress.org. We've been unable to reach him. We've been trying to reach him for the last 10 minutes. David Swanson is media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association, board member of the Progressive Democrats of America. It's ILCAOnline.org. And what's the website for Progressive Democrats, David?
That would be PDAmerica.org.
PDAmerica.org. Let's take another phone call here. We have Joanne in Ohio. Hey, Joanne.
Hi, how are you?
Great. You were at ground zero there in Ohio, eh?
Yes, and I was so incensed at Bernie's comments that drove me to the phone.
Okay. What incensed you?
First of all, we all know that Kerry won Ohio. But
how do you know that, Joanne? How do you know that?
Well, if you count up the provisional ballots, the number of people disenfranchised and the corruptness in the electronic voting. It doesn't take many votes to see that Kerry did win Ohio.
Well, are you saying that he did win it or that he should have won it?
I feel he did win it. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, Kerry's, his people that he chose to support, his support people, Donna Brazil and Bob Schrump, and Congress's behavior yesterday just shows that they have disenfranchised the progressives in this country.
Yeah.
And I quit the Democratic Party yesterday. And
well,
I would call on all progressives to do the same.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you. Here's the question, Joanne, although I'm not ready to throw in the towel that quickly or that easily, but nonetheless, here's the question. If if you believe that John Kerry really did win Ohio, not that he should have won had there been enough voting machines in minority districts or in heavily Democratic districts, or not that he should have won had there not been Republican phone banks making phone calls to Democratic voters telling them to show up on Wednesday instead of Thursday, things like that. But that there actually were more votes cast in Ohio for Kerry than for Bush. If you believe that, and you believe that there's evidence of that, where's John Kerry?
Well, that's the problem.
I'm saying, you know, why are we getting upset with Bernie Sanders about this? Where is John Kerry?
Well, that is the problem. And I have written to John Kerry. I've written to the newspapers. I am an activist. And that is why I quit the party.
Yeah.
Because of Kerry and Congress's yesterday, their demonstration. And I'd like to pose this question to the media. How many people in Congress today have not been legally elected?
Well, part of the problem is that with all these electronic voting machines, we don't have any idea.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah.
And I think that can relate back to their behavior of the Republicans on the floor yesterday. Of course they want to cast aspersions aside, because half of them probably don't even belong there.
Yeah.
We're having laws made by people that don't belong in Congress.
David, what are your thoughts on this? You get in on this conversation here.
I understand the sentiment in wanting to quit the Democratic Party. I wonder why not do it 4 years ago when they didn't even make the effort that they did this time. I mean, we do have a step forward. But I agree that there is strong evidence that Kerry won Ohio, not just that he should have, but that he clearly did, beginning with the exit polls. And Bob Fitrakis, I wish he were here, has been the mover and shaker and the expert reporter. And he would tell you that those who deny the accuracy of the exit polls on the basis of no evidence whatsoever are the conspiracy theorists. The reasonable observers who look at the evidence of tampering with machines, of throwing out 92,000 spoiled ballots, not to mention tens of thousands of provisional ballots, the overwhelming evidence is that there are far more votes for Kerry than needed. And John Boniface of the National Voting Rights Institute was arguing this yesterday. We were in a room, and a Democratic communications director was suggesting, well, that nobody really believes that Kerry won Ohio. And John Boniface made this strong argument that, of course he did. It's just not in the media.
Well, here's then for both of you then, for David and Joanne. If that's the case, why is it? I mean, John Kerry's got this $15 million war chest. He's got all these lawyers. We're talking about the presidency being at stake. It's not as if there's not a precedent for challenging elections. He could just look at what happened in Washington State last week. Why have John Kerry's attorneys, who I'm assuming have all of this information fully available to them, why are they saying, well, we lost?
Well, I'd like to make a statement to that, Tom, because I heard that Kerry's lawyers from Cincinnati had ties to Governor Taft. I don't know if that can be confirmed.
And Governor Taft is a Democrat?
He's our Republican.
He's a Republican. I see.
That I can confirm that, absolutely, but I'm not sure that's a full explanation of the problem. I think Kerry's advisors have moved him in a suicidal direction for many months. I mean, you can ask, why didn't he challenge the voting fraud? You could also ask, why didn't he challenge George W. Bush on the war? Why did he not reply? Why did it take him months to reply to outrageous criticisms of his conduct in Vietnam? You know, there are any number of glaring mistakes that are all explicable if you can get your mind around thinking the way the DNC thinks.
Well, I bring up that he surrounded himself with this type of people, and it was a road to ruin.
Yeah, it was a disaster. Joanne, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. What you say he did, This is mind-boggling, David. Did Kerry go into this thing with incompetent advisors who set out to lose? I mean,
I'm not arguing they set out to lose. I'm not arguing a grand conspiracy between the two parties. I'm suggesting that the way they think leads to
losing.
The wrong direction. The election should not have even been close.
Yeah, so Schroman's
and
like 8 for 8 or something.
A guy like Bob Schroman and these other advisors and put them in charge of your campaign. You know, if this were a sports team, you wouldn't go out and get somebody with a record of 1-18. You know, you would look for a winning strategy. But that's not the way it's done in the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Now, do you hope for change? We're talking with David Swanson, by the way, media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association, ILCAonline.org, and board member of the Progressive Democrats of America, is that PD Democrats?
PDAmerica.org.
PDAmerica.org. Thank you very much, PDAmerica.org. What's the solution, David? We've got about 2 minutes left here.
Well, we see the beginning of a solution in what happened yesterday in the building of a movement that was able, from the grassroots through individual grassroots communication in the face of a complete blackout by the media, to organize a campaign that was dismissed and mocked as a fringe lunatic effort and move a dozen U.S. senators on it. People are feeling that power and recognizing that we're a majority of Americans who want the right to vote and want a respectable democracy in this country, a majority that includes even Republicans. And we can be mocked and dismissed by the media as a marginal group, but we're beginning to be able to know that we aren't, and we're building a coalition of labor, of minority civil rights groups, of white progressive groups, and we're organizing for change. And we're
doing that in a whole bunch of different dimensions, and one of them is the ILCA, the International Labor Communications Association. Another one is the Progressive Democrats of America, PDAmerica.org, ILCAonline.org. David Swanson, thanks for being with us today and our best of the rest of the news segment. It didn't quite go as planned, but it was a great discussion. I appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Thank you. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The differences between snowflakes are intriguing and important to scientists. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. It's said that no two snowflakes are alike, and photographer Pat Belling confirms it. Belling has taken pictures of snowflakes for the past 23 years. She first became interested after seeing a book of photographs by Wilson Bentley, a turn-of-the-century photographer. Belling, who works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, says the study of individual flakes goes back even further than Bentley. The renowned scientist Robert Hooke first observed and documented them under a rudimentary microscope in the 17th century, but Bentley's photographs of snowflakes made him famous, and his passion for documenting the differences between individual flakes intrigued scientists. Meteorologists have since learned that the shape of a snowflake depends on a number of factors. All snowflakes have six sides because of the way water molecules organize as they form ice crystals, but the way each snowflake turns out depends mostly on temperature and pressure. For example, Belling says the most intricate snowflakes form at higher humidity.
Depending on where it is in the cloud and the water vapor pressure as it goes dancing through the cloud and the temperature, it spreads out into all of its leafiness and the pretty complex pieces, or depending again on those conditions, it stays in just that hexagon. Sometimes it's a three-dimensional column, and then other times you get the pellets.
Snow enthusiasts like Belling know what shape snowflakes are going to be as soon as they step out into the cold. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Yeah, I would give just about anything to have old Harry back. Well, at least some parts of him. The Harry who dropped the atomic bombs, I'm ambivalent about. Because it was, well, that's a whole other discussion. But the Harry who said we need to have a national health care insurance program immediately, single-payer health care system. The Harry who vetoed the Taft-Hartley bill. Yeah. Harry Truman, where are you when we need you? Where are any politicians when we need them, who will stand up for we the people, and as Harry Truman would say, give them hell? Where are those politicians? They have become so few and far between. It's just amazing. And here now we find 25% of American working people now earn less than $8.70 an hour before taxes, which puts a family of four under the federal poverty level and without any medical insurance or health care. And this, you know, the state of the working poor is a disaster. Are you going to hear about this in the State of the Union address on January 20th? Somehow I doubt it. In fact, instead, what we just learned from the Bush administration is that they are going to cut back on Pell Grants for low-income college students this year. Pell Grants are pretty much the one and only way that people, middle class and working poor kids whose parents can't afford to put them through college and who don't have enough equity in their home to borrow the money to put them through college, which is an increasingly
frightening phenomena, frankly. I think this is just a tragedy that we have so many, literally hundreds of thousands of middle-aged families in the United States who have wiped out their savings, wiped out their retirements, and mortgaged their homes to put their kids through college. And you have ads on TV, you know, where you see this ad where the kid comes home and, look, Dad, I got accepted. And the dad is going, yes, Ivy League. And he's hawking his jewelry and his watch, and he's putting his car up for sale. And then he's got the Russian guy that he's going to have rent a room. And then his wife comes in and says, oh, don't worry, we got a new mortgage on the house. Oh, let's just go deeper in debt. Well, Pell Grants are the one thing that will prevent that, right? This is grants for the working poor and for middle class Americans who can't afford otherwise to go to college. The Bush administration has just cut them. Just cut them. Some 1.3 million college students will have their education and benefits cut by 13%. Close to 90,000 others will lose them entirely. When are we going to wake up to the fact that there is a war going on middle-class America and the working class of this country by George W. Bush and his buddies? And it's a war that they are winning. Unless we start doing something about it. Class war has been declared, folks. It has been declared. And as Warren Buffett said, his side is winning.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. For the first time in the history of U.S. Airlines, a bankruptcy court has thrown out a union contract as it gave U.S. Airways what it demanded. The International Association of Machinists, representing about 9,000 workers at U.S. Airways, will have to agree to a concessions deal with the airline now or face the loss of its contracts. Workers know that if they reject the voluntary concessions agreement, their entire union contracts will be null and void. Flight attendants at U.S. Airways have approved 10% pay cuts. The machinists union is being hit hard, expected to lose half its jobs in its U.S. Airways mechanics local as a result of the bankruptcy court decision.
In his State of the State speech Wednesday night, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger urged lawmakers to dramatically reform budget priorities. With a deficit above $8 billion, the governor says California has a spending problem, yet he promised to submit a budget next week with no new taxes, while gutting the public employees' retirement package. WIN correspondent Vinny Lombardo has the story.
Accordingly, we must do what businesses have been doing. For new employees, we must move from a defined benefit to a defined contribution system.
Under the current retirement scheme, California employees are guaranteed a set amount. The average worker who retires at age 60 with 19 and a half years of service receives $1,673.82 a month. Dave Lowe, Assistant Director of Governmental Relations with the California School Employees Association, says the governor's proposal is fatally flawed.
What the governor wants to do is change the plan to force all the new employees to gamble their pensions on the stock market. And if they end up gambling badly, what's going to happen? Either they're going to retire in poverty or the taxpayers and the government's going to have to bail them out.
On Thursday, the governor convened a special session of the California legislature to press for tighter reins on spending. If lawmakers don't go along, Schwarzenegger says he'll appeal directly to voters at a special election in June. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
The AFL-CIO says Hadi Saleh, the international Secretary of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions, will be sorely missed. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney condemned Saleh's murder. The Iraqi labor leader was killed by assassins in his Baghdad home.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission reports that over the last 5 years, pregnancy bias complaints have risen by 10%. In 2003, there were more than 4,000 complaints of women being discriminated against because of pregnancy. By law, pregnancy discrimination by employers is illegal. Prospective employers may not use pregnancy as a factor during the hiring process unless the pregnancy could interfere with a woman's ability to perform the job adequately.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Buckle your seatbelts, buckaroos. Apparently, the airlines feel they've not done enough to make air travel a stress-filled and downright irritating experience, so now they're pushing a plan to let some cell phone jerk sit in the seat next to you and yammer nonstop at high volume about nothing for 2 or 3 hours as you wing across the country. That's a definition of hell, and it's a surefire setup for some serious air rage at 30,000 feet. On practically every flight these days, you'll encounter cell phone maniacs barking self-importantly into their little chunks of plastic. These callers seem to think that the rest of us will consider them hotshots for calling from a plane. It's pathetic, and the more pathetic they are, the louder they talk, annoying passengers for several rows around. I've seen passengers come close to blows with these pretentious prattlers. The saving grace has been that the noise ceases once the plane takes off, for cell phones can interfere with the pilot's communications and must be shut off during flight. But the airlines are now seeking regulatory approval for new technology that will let the noisy ones natter into their cell phones clear across the country. Bob, this is Jack. I'm on the plane to Portland, so this is a good time to go over our third quarter sales figures. Beatrice? Hi, it's Nancy. I'm in the air. Can you believe it? Have I told you about my bladder condition? What, you can't hear me? Okay, I'll speak louder. It's going to get ugly up there if this thing goes through. Yet the airlines see it as a moneymaker, so the Bushites are pushing to okay the change, freeing airlines to make a buck on air rage. This is Jim Hightower saying, I could be one of those ragers. A few hours of flight time is one of the last sanctuaries of cell phone silence in our harried world. Must we fill it with infuriating noisemakers just because it's technologically possible? To oppose this intrusion, contact the FCC's public comments page at www.fcc.gov.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle, helping you win the water cooler wars. By the way, just a heads up, one of the advantages, there are many advantages of living in a small town, which I do here in the People's Republic of Vermont, a little town of 8,900 people. One of them is that you very quickly get to know, you know, if there's a good doctor, bad doctor, good dentist, bad dentist, and there's not a whole lot of them around. I guess the downside is that there's not a whole lot of them around, and that means that if you want to have some dental work done or something like that, then you pretty much have to, well, here's the bottom line. There's not a dentist around here who doesn't close their office before 4 o'clock. So I will not be here on Monday because I have some dental work I have to get done, and so Rama Schneider is going to be filling in for me. Just to let you know, that's not the bad news. That's the good news. The good news. I shouldn't present that in the context of bad news, good news, should I? Rama's in the chat room right now. He's going to get some abuse for that. Notice of revocation of independence by this John Cleese just sent this out from Fawlty Towers, Torquay, Devon, England, to the citizens of the United States. In the light of your I'm not even going to try and do a British accent. In the light of your failure to elect a competent president of the United States, and thus to govern yourselves, we hereby give notice of the revocation of your independence effective today. Her Sovereign Majesty Queen Elizabeth II will assume monarchical duties over all states, commonwealths, and other territories except Utah, which she does not fancy. Your new Prime Minister, the Right Honorable Tony Blair, member MP for the 97.85% of you who have until now been unaware that there is a world outside your borders, will appoint a minister for America without the need for further elections. Congress and Senate will be disbanded. A questionnaire will be circulated next year to determine whether any of you have noticed. To aid in the transition to the British Crown dependency, the following rules are introduced with immediate effect. One, you should look up revocation in the Oxford English Dictionary, then look up aluminium. We say aluminum here in the United States. Check the pronunciation guide. You will be amazed at just how wrongly you have been pronouncing it. The letter U will be reinstated in words such as favor and neighbor. Skipping the letter U is nothing more than laziness on your part. There will be no more bleeps in the Jerry Springer show. If you're not old enough to cope with bad language, then you shouldn't have chat shows. When you learn to develop your vocabulary, then you won't have to use bad language as often. You will no longer be allowed to own or carry guns. You will no longer be allowed to own or carry anything more dangerous in public than a vegetable peeler. Because we don't believe you are sensible enough to handle potentially dangerous items, you will now require a permit if you wish to carry a vegetable peeler in public. And finally, that cold, tasteless stuff you insist on calling beer is not actually beer at all. It is lager. From November 1st, an only proper British bitter will be referred to as beer. And European brews of known and accepted provenance will be referred to as lager. The substances formerly known as American beer will henceforth be referred to as near-frozen gnat's urine, with the exception of the product of the American Budweiser Company, whose product will now be referred to as weak near-frozen gnat's urine. This will allow true Budweiser, as manufactured for the last 1,000 years in Pilsen, Czech Republic, to be sold without risk of confusion. Finally, he says, number 15, please tell us who killed JFK. It's been driving us crazy. Thank you very much for your cooperation. Have a great day. This, the Notice of Revocation of Independence to the United States from John Cleese. Boy, talk about in the good work if you can get it department. Is this have you heard this story? This is Armstrong Williams. Armstrong Williams, one of America's more well-known African-American commentators, viewed by certainly the conservatives and many moderates as a leading spokesman for Black America, received a $250,000. Well, what do you call it? Is it a bribe? He actually got it from the Bush administration. It's your tax dollars and mine. They gave him $240,000 to hustle for the No Child Left Behind law on his nationally syndicated television show and to urge other Black journalists to do the same. without telling them that he got the money, of course. The campaign, part of an effort to promote No Child Left Behind, required, this is an article by Greg Toppo in First Edition, published in USA Today, Gannett. The campaign, part of an effort to promote No Child Left Behind, required commentator Armstrong Williams to, quote, regularly comment on No Child Left Behind during the course of his broadcasts, end quote, and to interview Education Secretary Rod Page for TV and radio spots that aired during the show in 2004. Can you believe this? This is incredible. Seeking to build support among black families for its education reform law, the Bush administration paid prominent black pundit Armstrong Williams $240,000. The contract, there's even a contract. The contract, detailed in documents obtained by USA Today through a Freedom of Information Act request. I mean, we've got to file a lawsuit to find out if our tax dollars are being used for bribes. The contract, detailed in documents obtained by USA Today through a Freedom of Information Act request, also shows that the Education Department, through the Ketchum Public Relations firm, I wonder if that's the same firm that had the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador lie before Congress about how the invading Iraqi troops were throwing babies out of incubators in Kuwait, which was the thing that turned the tide of American public opinion. Prior to that, we didn't want to get involved in the Gulf War in 1991, which has now led to well over 100,000 of our young men and women being disabled as a consequence of being over there, and God only knows what's going to be the result of this one, another Bush debacle. Anyhow, through the Ketchum Public Relations firm, arranged with Williams to use contacts with America's Black Forum, a group of black broadcast journalists, to encourage the producers to periodically address NCLB. If somebody may be saying, "What did I just hear him say? He wasn't in favor of the 91 invasion." No, it was. Is supporting one dictatorship to, and still is, by the way, Kuwait may be a friend of ours, but it's a dictatorship. Supporting one dictatorship over another, come on, give me a break. He persuaded, back to Armstrong Williams, he persuaded radio and TV personality Steve Harvey to invite Page onto his show twice. That's Rod Page, the Secretary of Education, who got there because he had such great test scores for the Houston, I believe it was, Texas school district that he was the head of. Turns out he had fudged the numbers. He had lied about the numbers. We had faith-based numbers, right? But nonetheless, Bush made him, it came out after he was made Secretary of Education. In fact, I think he still is Secretary of Education. Harvey's manager, Rush and McDonald, confirmed the appearances. The contract may be illegal because Congress has prohibited propaganda or any sort of lobbying for programs funded by the government. Melanie Snow, Sloan of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington says, and it is propaganda. Williams' contract was part of a $1 million deal with Ketchum that produced video news releases designed to look like news reports. Remember those? The Bush administration used similar news releases last year to promote its Medicare prescription drug plan. They're still up to it. Promoting a scolding from the Government Accountability Office, which called them an illegal use of taxpayer dollars. Well, who's going to hold them to account, though, with the House and Senate and the Attorney General now is Bush's personal lawyer? These guys are so corrupt. This is mind-boggling. Williams, 45, a former aide to U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. Oh, geez. Just him and who else was? Laura Ingraham? It's like corruption breeds corruption, is one of the top black conservative voices in the nation. He hosts The Right Side on TV and radio and writes op-ed pieces for newspapers, including USA Today, while running a PR firm, Graham Williams Group. And he takes bribes. Sure looks to me like it's a bribe anyway. Maybe he would like to call into this program and tell us that it's not. I would be glad to give him an opportunity to defend himself. Mr. Williams, if you are listening, our number is 1-866-889-8894. In the meantime, let's hear from Ed in California. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Good morning, afternoon, whatever it is out there.
Yeah.
Afternoon, probably.
It is.
I sensed that you were kind of depressed about the Pell Grants. Is that right?
Depressed isn't the right word. I'm furious.
Well, Tom, I think you need to be more positive. There's another government program that helps where the Pell Grants have cut off for poor people.
And that is?
join the Army and you get the college tuition.
Well, of course, Ed, how could I have missed that?
Why weren't you positive, Tom?
Well, you know, I should have remembered. That's, you know, we had this wonderful case of this sweet young girl who got blown up and her truck fell, you know, went over, Jessica Lynch in Iraq, and she was just there. Excuse me, because she wanted to become a teacher. She wanted to go to college, and so she joined the Army. You're absolutely right. Cut back on the Pell Grants, and you'll get more people enlisted.
I hope I put some happiness in your day.
Ed, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
You always have this the insightful edge on things, and you certainly did today. Of course, it makes perfect sense. It just makes perfect sense. They can't get enough young people to join the military. To fight Bush's misguided war, because everybody realizes that it's a scam and that he's an incompetent commander and that he and Rumsfeld is running this thing like an idiot, and people are dying. I mean, we hit last week over 10,000 American soldiers sufficiently wounded that they had to leave the theater of battle. The best estimate is maybe over 30,000 if you include psychological injuries and whatnot. But we're talking about people who've like had their eyes blown out, their eardrums blown out, their legs and arms taken off. Over 10,000, over 1,300 dead, because George W. Bush decided in 2000 with Karl Rove. You can find this in Bob Woodward's book. That if he was perceived as a strong, decisive leader, he'd get reelected in 2004. We have a war so George W. could get himself reelected. He was not going to make the mistake his daddy did of ending the war too quickly. His father ended the war in 91 too quickly, and the good vibes didn't last long enough. He went from an 80 or 90% approval ratings down to losing the election. George wasn't going to let that happen. Harriet in Seattle's on the line. Hey, Harriet, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Good morning. Afternoon.
Yeah, all of the above.
All of the above. There's one thing that kind of warning you. Know, we need some help from you on as to how can we get this going? What do we need to do to get it started? Which is, as we know, there are things that Bush does, if you will, in public by certain idiotic laws that he signs and things like Pell Grants that he snatches back. And I agree with that previous caller, a little ploy to increase enlistment. But there's the public side, but then he's gutting us behind our back with executive orders.
Yeah, we're just about out of time, Harriet. What's your point?
Okay, how do we go about getting all the executive orders made public?
Oh, that's an interesting question. They're not secret. The problem that you've identified, Harriet, is not malfeasance on the part of the administration. It's malfeasance on the part of the media. The Fourth Estate has fallen down. Not to the best of my knowledge, none of the national networks, for example, last night reported the fact that for the first time in the history of the United States, an election was challenged in Congress. I mean, this is absolute and utter failure on the part of these people, and it's a crime. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer. The new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique. And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. I don't want all of my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I ain't lived forever, but I've lived enough. And I've learned to be gentle, and I've learned to be tough.
And welcome back.
I found only two things that last till the end. One is your heroes, the other's your friends.
I can't help it. I'm sorry. I started out in radio in 1968 as a country western DJ, and I still... there's still some good music out there. And, yeah, I like rock and roll. I mean, that was my generation, but I developed an affection for country as well. There, in fact, there's just about no music that I don't like. So, that said, 25 minutes after the hour... The Army Reserve, writes Robert Burns for the Associated Press, the Army Reserve, whose part-time soldiers served in combat and support roles in Iraq and Afghanistan, is so hampered by misguided Army policies and practices that it is, quote, rapidly degenerating into a broken force, the Reserve's most senior general says. Now, you may have heard this. This was actually, this is not today's news. This was yesterday's news. But I bring this up in the context of a larger issue. And that is, you know, what George W. Bush is up to and how this is happening, how this whole thing is playing out. Now, first of all, we have this war that was organized, planned, and waged for, in my opinion, for primarily partisan purposes and secondarily for oil. We had on the political side of it, it was an absolute win. They absolutely believed that there was no downside. It would be a slam dunk, to quote George Tenet, that it would be a quick war, that George W. Bush, you know, war, not just Americans, all countries, I suppose, like to be winners, right? It's a sports thing. And, oh, yeah, we took that guy out. He's a bad guy. It is. And, of course, there were a few million people around the world, the largest demonstrations in the history of the world.
saying, no, you don't get it. It's not going to be that easy. And there will be nationalists. There will be people who don't like their country being occupied. I mean, just imagine if, you know, a lot of people were, well, you got about half of America right now saying, hey, you know, we're not really all that appreciative of George W. Bush. In fact, more than half of America. Bush's approval ratings below 50%, and his policy approval ratings certainly well below 50% on many of his policies. He's having to spend hundreds of millions of dollars of our taxpayer dollars to promote things like, you know, his idea to give our Social Security money to his friends in the financial services industry. So what happened if Canada said, well, you know, let's liberate America? They've got a despot down there. He's pushing through policies that people don't like. He's holding people without trial. Some 40 people have now died in our custody without access to lawyers, without trial. You know, he's killing people. Canada views capital punishment here, by the way, the same way that we viewed Saddam's capital punishment. You know, they're executing people. And what if Canada? It's not a perfect analogy, but what if Canada invaded? And they said, we'll free you folks, don't worry, we're going to free you. And even those of us who thought, you know, we really don't want George Bush as our president. But and as much as we like Canada and Canadians, you know, I mean, I got nothing against Canada and Canadians. I live an hour and a half from the Canadian border, and I have great affection for Canada. But if Canada invaded my country to free me from George W. Bush, I would fight the Canadians. I just would. I mean, you know, welcome to the wonderful world of human nature. This is the basis of tribalism, of family, of nationalism. He may be a lousy president, but he's my president. And if some other country tried to come charging in here with the barrel of a gun and say, we're going to free you, I'm not sure I'd be all that happy about it. And guess what? That's what the Iraqis are saying to us right now. And how anybody in this administration could have thought anything other than that would happen, particularly given the fact that it has happened over and over and over again. It happened in Algeria, it happened in France, it happened in the Congo, it happened in, or not France, it happened to the French in Vietnam. I mean, pick a country where this hasn't happened. I say, well, Germany and Japan, completely different situation. Those countries had gone nuts. They were the initial aggressors and they knew it. Very different situation. They should have known, but anyhow, 29 minutes past the hour.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. For the first time in the history of U.S. Airlines, a bankruptcy court has thrown out a union contract as it gave U.S. Airways what it demanded. The International Association of Machinists, representing about 9,000 workers at U.S. Airways, will have to agree to a concessions deal with the airline now or face the loss of its contracts. Workers know that if they reject the voluntary concessions agreement, their entire union contracts will be null and void. Flight attendants at U.S. Airways have approved 10% pay cuts. The machinist union is being hit hard, expected to lose half its jobs in its U.S. Airways mechanics local as a result of the bankruptcy court decision.
In his State of the State speech Wednesday night, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger urged lawmakers to dramatically reform budget priorities. With a deficit above $8 billion, the governor says California has a spending problem, yet he promised to submit a budget next week with no new taxes, while gutting the public employees' retirement package. WIN correspondent Vinny Lombardo has the story.
Accordingly, we must do what businesses have been doing. For new employees,
We must move from a defined benefit to a defined contribution system.
Under the current retirement scheme, California employees are guaranteed a set amount. The average worker who retires at age 60 with 19 and a half years of service receives $1,673.82 a month. Dave Lowe, Assistant Director of Governmental Relations with the California School Employees Association, says the governor's proposal is fatally flawed.
What the governor wants to do is change the plan to force all the new employees to gamble their pensions on the stock market. And if they end up gambling badly, what's going to happen? Either they're going to retire in poverty or the taxpayers and the government's going to have to bail them out.
On Thursday, the governor convened a special session of the California legislature to press for tighter reins on spending. If lawmakers don't go along, Schwarzenegger says he'll appeal directly to voters at a special election in June. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Vinny Lombardo in Santa Cruz, California.
The AFL-CIO says Hadi Saleh, the international secretary of the Iraqi Federation of Trade Unions, will be sorely missed. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney condemned Saleh's murder. The Iraqi labor leader was killed by assassins in his Baghdad home.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission reports that over the last 5 years, pregnancy bias complaints have risen by 10%. In 2003, there were more than 4,000 complaints of women being discriminated against because of pregnancy. By law, pregnancy discrimination by employers is illegal. Prospective employers may not use pregnancy as a factor during the hiring process unless the pregnancy could interfere with a woman's ability to perform the job adequately.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website if you want to drop into our chat room or participate in our message board, more than welcome to, no charge. And no spam. We don't sell our email lists or redistribute them in any way or anything like that. So anyhow, welcome back to our program. Retired Rear Admiral John D. Hudson, a former judge, advocate general, and current dean of the Franklin Pierce Law School, and Elisa Massimono, director of the Human Rights First organization, tried to set Bill O'Reilly straight. And this is, see, what you have to understand is there is this campaign on the right to try and get around the rule of law. It is part of the creeping fascism that is taking over America, not just the corporatization of America, but the loss of our civil liberties, the loss of our rights. And this, I know of no other way to call it than creeping fascism. We have, for ever since 1215, when King John signed the Magna Carta, we have for what is that, 800 and some odd years, we have acknowledged that there are that people have rights of some sort, right? Now, granted, the Magna Carta didn't give rights to serfs, but it was the beginning. Okay. And then throughout the Middle Ages and into the Enlightenment and certainly the time of the American Revolution, there was also an acknowledgement that there were certain standards of warfare. In fact, one of the biggest arguments that the British had against the United States, one of their biggest complaints, and they made a serious PR effort to get the rest of the world on their side about this, and this was their big lobbying with France to try and keep France from financing the American Revolution, which France ultimately did. I mean, if Ben Franklin hadn't spent an entire year in France lobbying the French, we would not be an independent nation. And one of the charges that the British used to try and discourage the French was that we were not participating in the game of war by the rules of war. The British would show up. They'd, you know, be five across, 50 deep, you know, there's a regiment or whatever of British soldiers, and the redcoats, and they'd be marching with arms, you know, rifles that are ready, down through the roads, through the forest, expecting to find the opposing army arrayed on a battlefield, stretched out, you know, in typical fashion, the way that wars were fought in Europe. And instead, the Americans would be hiding in trees, shooting at them. And they were like, this is not fair. These people are not in uniform. They are illegal combatants. But nonetheless, even at that, when the British took our people as prisoners, more often than not, the vast majority of the cases, they held them as prisoners. Why? Well, there were a number of reasons. One, they might be able to swap them for their own prisoners. Two, they wanted to make sure that when we took British prisoners as prisoners of war, that we treated them decently. So they treated our prisoners of war relatively decently. And it certainly was no picnic, but they didn't torture by and large. I mean, we've had these rules of combat forever. So there's been this idea that in time of war, you have combatants. You have those people who are participating in the war. We did the same thing in Vietnam. We made the decision that even though the Viet Cong were not in uniform, that when we took them prisoner, we would hold them under the provisions of the Geneva Convention. Now, there was a series of Geneva Conventions going back to the 1900s, first initiated along with the creation of the Red Cross, actually. And I believe it was the third Geneva Convention developed in the 1940s that we all signed. It had to do with the rules of warfare that says, you know, you don't torture people. Sorry, you just don't do it. And as I said, there's very good reasons for that. So, number one, in time of war, people participating in war they have certain rights. Even though they're out in the process of trying to kill each other, they have certain rights. On the other hand, there are people who are not in war, and we call those people criminals. Right? In Germany, you had the Bader-Meinhof gang. In Italy, you had the Red Brigades. They even captured Aldo Moro. Remember Aldo Moro, the prime minister of Italy? They captured this guy, stuck him in the trunk of a car. They killed him. It would be the equivalent of Al-Qaeda capturing, kidnapping, and killing Bill Clinton or George W. Bush. They killed the prime minister. They were viewed as criminals. You have the Basque separatists, ETA, in Spain. You have the Irish Republican Army in Ireland, who are viewed by many of the British as terrorists. I realize that's a whole arguable thing, but nonetheless, my point is that there are basically these two categories of people who engage in confrontation against governments. The first are those who are representing a nation. If you're representing a nation, then it is a war, and you are covered under the Geneva Conventions, and it's a war. The second is, if you're not representing a nation, the Red Brigades were not, you know, they're in Italy about Italy. They're not representing any particular nation. They were terrorists. And so they were viewed as criminals. The November 17 group in Greece. Well, let's make it even more, you know, let's bring it home. There are a lot of folks in the United States who have read the Turner Diaries, the book that inspired Tim McVeigh, who are stocking up on their guns and way beyond that, you know, missile launchers and whatnot. And it's not just in the hills of Montana. It's all over the United States. A whole bunch of these folks. And Tim McVeigh thought he was going to start the next American Revolution. He thought that when he blew up the federal base, I mean, he was simply following the script that is in that book, The Turner Diaries. And he thought he was going to start the American Revolution, that we would be so fed up with what happened in Waco, Texas, and Randy Weaver's, you know, wife getting shot by the FBI and all this. I mean, there were some serious abuses by the FBI of we the people in the mind of Tim McVeigh. abuses that elevated to the point where he felt that it was his duty to help overthrow the government of the United States. And so he blew up the federal building in Oklahoma. He was a terrorist. What did we do? We declared him a criminal. He was not a foreign army. He was not taken as a prisoner of war. Prisoners of war actually have more rights than criminals do. Why? Because we as a nation go to war. And so we want our soldiers to be protected. We want them to be treated well. We don't, as a nation, engage in criminal activity, at least not overtly, not intentionally, not as a matter of policy. And so we don't offer criminals the same rights that we offer prisoners of war. Prisoners of war have more rights than criminals. But when we got Tim McVeigh, we did not say that he was a POW. We said he was a criminal. But as a criminal, he still had access to an attorney. He had access to a defense. He had access to a jury of his peers. And that jury of his peers looked at what he did and sentenced him to death. And that sentence was carried out. But he had access to due process. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. The Bush administration, for the first time in the history of the United States, the Bush administration has said, we are now going to say there is a third category. Now, the last time this was done in a civilized nation that I know of, and maybe you know of another one, you can correct me, and you know, I'd love to hear it. Give me a call. But to the best of my knowledge, the last time this happened in a Western nation, in what we call, you know, Western civilization, was in Germany in 1934. After the Reichstagsgebäude was bombed, February 28th, 1933, by Marius von der Lubbe, and Hitler declared a national emergency. And he said, there's a third category of persons. They're not covered by they're not prisoners of war, because they are an internal enemy. And they are not criminals, because we can't demonstrate that they have committed a crime. And so he created this third category, and there's a German word for it. I don't have it at the tip of my tongue. It's not here in front of me. And started rounding those people up and putting them in concentration camps and saying, and initially it was the communists, the trade unionists, the rabble-rousing newspaper editors, those people who politically opposed Hitler. And it grew very quickly from there, of course, as we know, the story of the Holocaust. And he said, there's this third category, and these people in this third category, they're not POWs, and so they're not entitled to the Geneva protections, and they're not criminals, and so they're not entitled to the protections that here in the United States we find, for example, in the Bill of Rights. The Fifth Amendment saying that you have the right not to testify against yourself. The Sixth Amendment that very clearly lays out that you have the right to a fair trial. In fact, here it is. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with a witness against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witness in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. The Sixth Amendment. The Seventh Amendment, at suits of common law where the value at controversy shall exceed $20, the right to trial by jury shall be preserved, and in no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined by any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. In other words, you have the right to a trial by jury. The Eighth Amendment, you have the right to make bail. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. The Fifth, Sixth, Seventh, and Eighth Amendments lay it out very clearly that criminals have rights. We want that to be the case because you never know. You might be the next person accused of being a criminal, and you should certainly have rights until it has been demonstrated that you are a criminal, in which case then you are subject to the penalties of the crime, you know, for the crime. But George W. Bush has now come along and said, just as Hitler did in the 30s, there's now a third category. There's this third category, and these people, we're not going to call them criminals, because then we would have to give them lawyers and they would have to have access to rights. Although, let's start at the beginning. We're not going to call them prisoners of war, because then they have to be able to talk to each other. They have, you know, because prisoners of war have a fair number of rights. And we don't want them talking to each other. We don't want them saying, hey, don't tell them about the bomb that's going to go off in so-and-so, right? So we don't want to call them POWs. But we're also not going to call them criminals. Now, if you call them criminals, you could keep them segregated from other potential criminals, as we did with Tim McVeigh. You could put them in solitary confinement, but you'd have to give them a lawyer. You have to tell them what the charges are against them. And maybe we don't have proof. Maybe there's even an American citizen. There's two so far. The most recent, Jose Padilla. We've been saying Padilla all these years. He wants us to know it's pronounced Padilla. Jose Padilla, who is an American citizen and has still not been charged with a crime and is still in prison. And so here we have now, another one of the advocates of the Reich trying to promote this idea. Here's Bill O'Reilly talking, being corrected by retired Rear Admiral John Houston and Elisa Massimono of the Human Rights First organization. And at the very end of this thing, he just says, okay, we're just not going to talk about it. Right? He's just going to shut the conversation. And just now, understanding what you understand now, listen to this conversation. This is truly frightening in America.
I think there's a clear definition of somebody fighting for a country in a conventional war and somebody targeting civilians as the 9/11 people did who were not in uniform. For example,
yeah, they would be called criminals like Tim McVeigh.
For example, say we captured the 9/11 killers. You would have afforded them Geneva Convention protection, sir?
No, they should be called criminals, not prisoners of war. Excuse me, Bill. But let's hear how it goes.
What would you do? Take them out and shoot them? I mean, this is the United States of America,
Bill.
Whoa.
I wouldn't give them Geneva Convention. I definitely would have taken them into custody, turned them over to the military, and given them rigorous interrogation, which doesn't include Miranda rights and a civilian lawyer. So I'll answer your question very specifically. Go ahead.
The Geneva Conventions don't require Miranda rights. There's nothing in the Geneva Convention that talks
about
those
kinds
of rights.
But it requires terrorists, people targeting civilians, to be treated as soldiers, and they're not. They're not at the level of soldiers.
They're not. They're criminals. See, do you get this? This is incredible red herring argument that's being put out by the Reich.
It doesn't actually require that, Bill. And I just want to get that straight. You seem to have this perception that applying the Geneva Conventions to these conflicts that we are now engaged in the war in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and the war against terrorism, somehow means that anyone captured in those conflicts has to be designated a POW. That's not true. The Geneva Conventions are not just about who's a POW. There are other categories of
there's a lot of layers to
the
convention, but what is indisputably true, both of you, is that you are elevating terrorists who kill civilians to the status of soldiers in a conventional war.
No, they're not. They're trying to say they're criminals.
That's
I believe
true.
That is flat.
No, that's
yes,
not
you
true.
Are.
We're,
just
we're
by applying the convention,
the human
you
beings.
Are doing that. And
yeah,
I believe that's flat out wrong. Now, let me get to another point. Because I don't want to get bogged down in minutiae here.
Yeah, right. Let me get to another point. I don't want to get bogged down in nonsense. See, do you get it? George W. Bush is trying to say, there's this third category, and you might be the next one. And you'll have no rights at all under the Geneva Conventions or under the Constitution. Thanks a lot, Bill O'Reilly. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at democraticmatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers.
Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
The differences between snowflakes are intriguing and important to scientists. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. It's said that no two snowflakes are alike, and photographer Pat Belling confirms it. Belling has taken pictures of snowflakes for the past 23 years. She first became interested after seeing a book of photographs by Wilson Bentley, a turn-of-the-century photographer. Belling, who works for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Climatic Research, says the study of individual flakes goes back even further than Bentley. The renowned scientist Robert Hooke first observed and documented them under a rudimentary microscope in the 17th century, but Bentley's photographs of snowflakes made him famous, and his passion for documenting the differences between individual flakes intrigued scientists. Meteorologists have since learned that the shape of a snowflake depends on a number of factors. All snowflakes have six sides because of the way water molecules organize as they form ice crystals, but the way each snowflake turns out depends mostly on temperature and pressure. For example, Belling says the most intricate snowflakes form at higher humidity.
Depending on where it is in the cloud and the water vapor pressure as it goes dancing through the cloud and the temperature, it spreads out into all of its leafiness and the pretty complex pieces, or depending again on those conditions, it stays in just that hexagon. Sometimes it's a three-dimensional column, and then other times you get the pellets.
Snow enthusiasts like Belling know what shape snowflakes are going to be as soon as they step out into the cold. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
The Tom Hartman Program.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds, because you're mine.
I want the line. Welcome back, my friends. Oh, what to have Johnny Cash's voice. It's 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman back here with you at the end of the day, the end of the week. And a marvelous week it's been. Beautiful, bright, sunny day it is here in the People's Republic of Vermont at this moment. We were talking about George W. Bush's military slash oil slash political policies.
And the ongoing evisceration, the ongoing disemboweling of civil rights in the United States by Bush and by Gonzalez and crew. And of course, I think Ed from California made a good point when he called earlier. He said, you want to know why they're, why they're cutting back on Pell Grants? He says, if there's no way to get a Pell Grant to go to college, how else are you going to pay for it unless you join the Army? Well, I believe George. I believed him during the campaign when he said, one of the few things of his, that he said that I believed, when he said that there would not be a draft. I don't think that there will be. Because if there was a draft, he would have to change his foreign policy. It was the draft, in large part, that got us out of Vietnam. I remember I lived through it. I was there. It was the draft. The average person having to show up. Now, can you imagine if George W.'s daughters had to go to Iraq? That's the campaign we should be organizing. Jenna and Barbara should join the Army and the Marine Corps, respectively. I mean, they're out of college. They're looking for something to do. If the war is such a noble thing, why don't they join? They're just the right age. It would create such a good example. Anyhow, last Tuesday, U.S. District Judge Owen Panner denied the request of National Guardsman, Army National Guardsman Sergeant Emiliano Santiago of Pasco, Washington, denied his motion for a preliminary injunction against having to report for active duty. He says that to go back to duty would be harm; it would cause him a harm. This is pretty amazing. The military has gone farther in Santiago's case. He originally signed for an 8-year tour with the Guard in 1996. He served it. But as a result of the stop-loss backdoor draft, his service has been extended to December of 2031, when he will be 54 years old. This guy has already served his 8 years. He's 27 years old. He signed up when he was 19. And they are telling him now he is in until he's 54. Tough luck, buddy. And a court just upheld the Bush administration. They don't need a draft. They don't need a draft. They've got enough already. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira Gravatt for engineering it, to Shelby, RadioPower.org, for streaming us around the planet, along with Mike Horn and all our friends at Cable Radio News, or Cable Radio Network, rather, for getting it out. Folks in our chat room for showing up. Great to see you all. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our sponsors as well. Happy Friday. Shabbat Shalom. TGIF. See you Monday.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program? Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Actually, I'll see you Tuesday. Rama will see you Monday. Have a good one.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try